It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley is here. We're going to spend some time talking about Apple moving away from Intel. What does it mean for the x86 architecture? What does it mean for Microsoft? We'll also talk about Microsoft 365. Teams gets more consumer features. And so long, Mixer. We hardly knew you. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 678, recorded Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. No code left behind. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Roman. Skip the waiting room and awkward face-to-face. Get ED medication conveniently delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Go to GetRoman.com/Windows for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. And by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of us are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you trust to protect you from online threats. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to ExpressVPN.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Joining us today to talk all about Apple, Paul Thurrott, yep. Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. Hello, you two. Everything good in your Hello. Neck of the woods?
Hello, you one.
It's funny because now New York's all good and California's going through the roof.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I'm sure New York will be fine forever.
It's like a whack-a-mole. That COVID keeps popping up. We keep hitting it with a hammer.
Because, as it turns out, when you open stuff up, it comes back.
Just to reassure you, not much reassurance for L.A., it's mostly in Southern California that we're having a climb. Although there has been a climb in Sonoma County, our county, but it's like, you know, there were a whole 11 cases yesterday.
Right. It's an easy fix for this. Just stop testing.
Stop testing. We wouldn't even know.
Exactly.
That little kid with the runny nose could be running around infecting us all. Mm-hmm. We'd go blithely around our.
All we notice is there's a lot less traffic.
Yep. There was a little league game in Petaluma. Lisa went over. Everybody's there. Parents are yelling at the umpires. It's not, you know, no masks. Normal. Volleyball out here. About 60 people playing volleyball downtown. The restaurants are bustling. And you know, we could dodge a bullet because we are in the exurbs, much like Lower Macungie Township. So we could be fine. But
Leo, I am right on the edge of what we call redneck territory. And I got to tell you, I'm not going into a restaurant with those people.
This now, is come a lot on, of, Paul. Don't be
no,
prejudiced.
No, I'm serious. This is a science and health issue. There is no way.
No.
I do. Yeah.
No. In fact, we take a walk every night. And we had been going through, and I put this in air quotes, downtown Petaluma, which for Mary Jo looks like her block, basically, you know, without the high rises. And it's just like everybody's walking, brushing past you, no masks.
Wow, it's not okay.
So we can't go there anymore. I wear my mask, but
area,
I think I'm worth
outside, theirs. 6 feet apart, that's okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like I feel fine
going
then.
In a crowded bar, restaurant thing inside.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. That's going to be.
And it's too bad that it's become a political matter. I got somebody irate yesterday or the day before emailed me and said, "You're an idiot. Masks don't do anything."
Oh, here we go.
What? Kind of who are you? He says, "I can send you paper after paper that says masks are ineffective." I say, "I don't know who you're listening to. My God is Dr. Fauci. I'm going with the doc." Mr. Fauci said, "Wear a mask." I'm going to wear a mask.
Everything's politicized. You know,
it's too bad.
Yeah, everything is.
It's too bad because it isn't a political debate. The virus don't care.
Right.
Virus is going to hit you no matter what side of the fence you're on. So
it is absolutely not political. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. It's weird. It's just, but you know, it's very American. It's very American. It's the way we are. We're bloody-minded. We're independent. That's what made this nation great.
Don't you feel like it's gotten cancerous? Like it's not, it's American to the 10th. Like, it's a little too American.
I don't know. I mean, watch Steven Spielberg's great movie, Lincoln, which talks about the very intense debate over the Emancipation Proclamation and so forth. Mm. And it's really clear that the Senate has been just as fractious as always. It's never been the saucer that cools the tea. It's always been cray cray, you know. And you got Calhoun jumping up and saying, "Oh, we'll never give up." And it's not.
I think it goes up and down. I mean, I agree. Today is no better, no worse than it. You know, but you know, in the '80s, when the two sharp political divides and people would work across the aisle.
Yeah.
You know, Tip O'Neill was famous for that. That's the kind of thing that's been lost. I mean, people stop talking, and it's just radical whatever on either side.
Now they won't even touch each other without a hygiene hand. Right. Anyway, poke you. All right. I completely.
Enough of my insane
We're all health. We're all in the same boat together. We all feel the same way. And poor Mary Jo's in Manhattan, which was the epicenter. Although, didn't I think I saw. The governor is going to stop doing his briefings.
Yeah, he already has stopped. Yeah.
Although then today he said, "But we're not letting anybody in from any other state. We're cool."
I know. Did you see that?
By the way, New York, don't you get on that George Washington Bridge, man? Okay,
right. They're just like, you know what? There's certain states where we're not letting people in. Yeah. So, yep.
Remember, Rhode Island did that to New York, and he was pissed.
They did. Yep.
He was pissed.
The bigger issue is going to be when Europe doesn't let anyone from the United States in.
They backed down, I think.
Which looks like it's happening, right?
It comes and goes.
They were just talking about it, but we deserve it. You know, we are the
third
world country that we are.
I wouldn't let me in anywhere.
I wouldn't want it to be anywhere near me. Yep. Where have you been? That's my name. No.
I would never visit a country that wouldn't allow me in. That's all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And if you didn't like that conversation, you're going to love this next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on a second, guys. Jeez. No, this is important.
It is. And I'm just going
to
say.
Mary Jo, I hope you paid attention to this. And I mean that honestly, because
I did not.
This is big news.
No. All right. Well, you need to go back and look at this because I cover.
I ignored it.
Okay. Well,
I'm just telling you, I did. And
did you really?
I've read about it.
Oh,
now,
you didn't
and I
watch
feel,
it. That's okay, though.
No, I feel up to speed and still just as bored as I was when it was happening.
Love it.
I don't know what this
Sorry.
Is.
Love it. So we're talking about Apple. And by the way, don't say the A word, the ARM word. This is Apple's move from Intel to Apple Silicon. And I knew that they wouldn't say ARM because
you did?
I
was surprised.
No, it's not ARM. I think that's what they're at great pains because ARM has been tarred with the brush of being slow, being low power. You know, it doesn't. And that's primarily thanks to Microsoft's very pathetic Windows on ARM devices, right?
Yep.
The HP NVX2, I mean,
Surface Pro X a little better, right?
But they're still so slow. But that's
bad battery
life. Apple didn't want to get in that space. They want to say, look, hey, we have an ARM architecture license. They didn't say this, but this is the fact. But what we're making is so far beyond what ARM and Qualcomm and TS and these other companies are doing, Exynos. Kieran, we're doing something that is custom. And the thing Apple does do, and this is why it's important, is they make the hardware, they make the operating, they make the whole kit and caboodle. The one thing they right now don't make is these system on a chip things. And because they make the kit and the caboodle, they know exactly what the operating system needs. They know exactly what the hardware does. And so they can make a chip that is finely tuned to exactly those specifications. Mm-hmm. I think that's something very different.
But you know, when Microsoft announced the Surface Pro X, they made a big deal out of working on their own custom chip, right? Like the ARM chip.
How custom was it? I guess. Don't forget, Apple bought PA Semi, a big semiconductor manufacturer. They have more than 1,000 chip designers on staff.
I bet Microsoft has that many.
Maybe.
I do.
But Microsoft hasn't been making, for the last 13 years, devices based on its own silicon.
Yeah.
Right? And by the way, the development kit that Apple is sending out is basically an iPad Pro with more RAM. It's that same chip in the iPad Pro. And when we saw the iPad Pro, we all said, wow, why is there so much power in this thing to run Candy Crush? Well, now we know. It's you know, I think that they have a lot of I'm sure. Well, you defend Microsoft. They have the expertise. They have the chip making expertise. Because what Apple doesn't want anybody to think is this is going to look anything like WoWA. Right?
Right. Yeah, maybe.
Is it going to be that?
I'm waiting for Paul to chime in since he cares about this a lot.
I'm putting you on the spot, Mary Jo. This is your turn to shine.
I think WoWA is a tiny blip in Apple's radar, right, and they pay no attention to it. Like, right. I don't think they're trying to distance themselves from Microsoft because they don't think Microsoft matters.
No, I agree with that, but I think there is some perception in the world. I know there is.
That Microsoft was there first.
Not
and
even
they
that.
Haven't been able to
no,
do
not
it.
Even that. That ARM chips can't possibly do Mac Pro grade performance.
Yeah.
And I think Apple, they said power about 300 times in that presentation.
Yeah.
You know,
so
they did the whole keynote. One more thing, Paul, then I'll let you talk. They did the whole keynote on that developer kit, basically. on the A12Z Bionic or whatever it is. And and then they said afterward, you know that whole thing that we were showing, Big Sur and everything? That wasn't on a Mac. That was on the new Apple Silicon. And that was pretty impressive because nobody said, oh, boy, that's laggy. Okay, your turn, Paul.
Anyone who cares at all about Windows needs to watch this part of that presentation because they just blew Microsoft out of the water and they are never going to look back. And Apple will... and has created ARM chips that are as good as anything that Intel can do in the high end. And there was no doubt about that. They would never make this transition if they couldn't do that. But that's the thing. What should kill everyone about what just happened is Microsoft has released multiple versions of Windows 10 on ARM and multiple versions of ARM chips, all of which are pathetic and sad. And Apple sat there and waited and waited and waited. And then it was perfect, and they said, okay, now we're doing it. And now we're just going to – and by the way, Windows 10 on ARM, I think Mary Jo said Apple doesn't even think about it. You know, Microsoft doesn't even think about it. It's nothing. It's just a little side
That's
project.
True.
The
yeah,
thing
true.
That is most impressive about what Apple is doing is that they are literally transitioning their entire product line to this chipset. If Windows 10 on ARM fails, and it has, but if it keeps failing –
who cares?
Windows 10 just keeps going. It's like whatever.
Right.
And that's the thing. You're either serious about doing this or you're not. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of stuff that, you know, there were a million examples of Microsoft going down a road and then giving up on it. And this is going to be one of them. And we're all going to, you know, bitch and moan for a little while when it happens. Mm-hmm. Wonder about what could have been. Said if they'd only done this, this would have happened and blah, blah, blah. And it's just the same thing over and over again. And I don't understand not being outraged by this point, because you can look at it with little things like the way that they added dark mode to macOS, which is a lot more elegant than the way it works in Windows. Or you can look at something major like this, which is an architectural foundation for their entire platform. It's incredible. What they're doing is incredible. And I hate this company. and I'm saying that. I mean, I hate them. But you cannot not be impressed by this.
Yeah. But don't you think part of this, too, is Microsoft's not doing what Apple is doing. Microsoft's not saying we're dumping Intel and going ARM. They're not saying that.
That's of course not. But yeah, the positive outcome. No, but you got to remember why they did ARM. Right. It wasn't because ARM is the future. It's because Perry Myerson wanted competition for Intel and AMD, in his words, was circling the drain at the time. All right, well, look, there's Qualcomm. They're actually the biggest chip maker in the world. Let's sign on with those guys. Let's pretend we're going to bring it to other ARM chipsets in the future.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I think they also went with ARM not just because they wanted to give Intel competition, but also because there were all these promises about battery life and lots of other things have not materialized, right?
So this thing, right.
But that's what I feel like. I feel like the strength Apple has is they can do something whole hog, right? Like we're going away from Intel. We're going to ARM, right?
Yep. But
Microsoft's not.
So, yeah. But I the other half of what I meant, what I was saying, which supports what you just said, was Microsoft doesn't care which chipset wins. What they wanted to do was give Intel competition to force them to pay attention to what they think is the mass market of the future for PCs, which are these thin and light fanless designs. And Intel was not there. It's still technically not there. I mean, they're only right now releasing their first 10 nanometer, you know, for ultra or so whatever they are, you know, ultra thin and light machines. I mean, their own roadmap, they were delayed by 3 to 5 years, whatever it was. You know, Intel just really failed at the exact wrong time.
Yeah.
As this stuff was happening. And Apple kind of bided its time. They love control. They want to control the whole thing. And that's, you know, understandable. And there is a case to be made that the better products will result. There's also a case to be made that more controlled products will result. But this bothers me on multiple levels, because there is the ARM thing, which, you know, again, like, you know, yeah, Windows 10 on ARM is a tiny thing. Okay, fine. You know what is kind of a bigger thing is just like the actual usability of the operating system. Microsoft's been dicking around with Fluent design for like 3-4 years now, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Little bit here, little bit here, little bit here. And, you know, like I just said, everything they do, they just it drifts away over time, and then it's silent for a while. And then they just we're doing something else now. The people who did that have moved on. They're in different parts of the company, or now they're at Google or Amazon or something. And so, you know, Apple just shows up and says, hey, we're going to make this whole thing consistent today. And they just do it all. And I'm telling you, I've been using it.
Do you
it's great.
Think,
it looks, it's
do
awesome.
You think Panos is going to change that? Like, the one thing I'll say about Panos, one of many things I can say about him, is he's a very detail-oriented and design-focused guy, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Where I feel like other Windows chiefs were less so, and they were more about fighting fires wherever they erupted. And Panos, I feel like, is a guy who will be like, I'll take all the time in the world to make this one icon look amazing.
I'll ruin the surprise. No, he'll never fix this. It's not fixable, because Microsoft as a company, as an institution, is incapable of making the decisions that are required to make this make sense. And they will not do it, because especially in Windows, backwards compatibility is king. They will never walk away from it. They will never say no to anybody. They will never say no to anything. And that's why you can still see Windows 95 icons in Windows 10 today. It's why there are at least 3 different management interfaces. It's why dark mode is only dark mode in some places. This is an operating system that has ads in it, Mary Jo. do you think they're good? The guys that did that are going to fix this? Like, I know
that bothers me a lot less than you, but yes.
All right. Well, okay. I don't know what to say to that.
But I understand your point. I understand your point. I want to be an optimist about this and think that now that there seem to be slowing down the new feature additions to Windows Client, that maybe that'll free up the 5,000 developers to actually fix the UI.
I have called for them to do just that many times. I did it as recently as today. I hope it happens. I got to tell you, the older I get, the more they don't do it, the less sure I am that it could ever happen. I'm really frustrated by this.
Yeah.
I don't like the Mac. I don't like Apple. I don't want to use this thing. I got to tell you, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, I don't know what the ARM stuff's going to be like, really. I mean, I think there's a real... that's going to be the real kick in the gut, is when this thing actually works. You know, we'll see. But
one thing you said, though, I would correct. You said Apple's been waiting. It's not that Apple's been waiting. They've been very quietly for over a dozen years.
Well, working, I meant.
Working really hard. And we're seeing people who watch the Apple ecosystem closely know now, you were doing Metal because you needed a graphics layer so that you could transition to ARM painlessly. Oh, you were working on all of these kits so that you could make this transition will be painless. So, and there's something, by the way, else that was one line in the keynote that is transformative, which is that the new Macs will run iOS software without modification, not an emulation.
By the way, it's deeper than that. It's even better than what you just said, because again, there's a fog of war thing that happens with any announcement. You get excited, or you pay attention to one thing and you might miss the next line. And I've gone back and rewatched it a few times. There are these little moments where they say things, and it's one of them is tied to what you just said, which is literally almost all iPhone and iPad apps will run unchanged on Mac OS. Almost all. Not some, not most. I don't remember the exact phrasing, but basically all. Now, developers might want to, probably will want to, modify those apps to, you know, have better support for keyboards maybe or whatever it might be. But
and so that's an example because we thought Catalyst was a technology to port iOS apps over to Mac. Oh, no. It turns out it was just a library, a framework. So if you want to add Mac features to your existing.
Features, exactly. For things that will now run natively on this other platform.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And they said something else. I don't know if you noticed this, but they said, and iOS apps designed for the iPad will automatically get Windows, resizable, full screen, all of the features of a Mac.
Yep.
Because we've been doing that. So, we've been moving that way.
If you want to put a little pin in a calendar and say this is where everything went south, it was Windows 8. And not for well, maybe you have thought of this, but I mean, there are many reasons why that is true. But one of them is Microsoft had this mobile platform that at the time was exciting and innovative and new and could have really amounted to something. But instead of promoting that in Windows, they looked at it and said, let's make something like it. And it's not going to be the same. And the apps aren't interchangeable. The programming models will be different. They'll look different. They will literally be different. Like they just made something like it. And they never talked again. And over here on Apple's side, you have, you know, different platforms for sure. And they have been working to bring those things together. Rather than have two separate things or three or whatever it is. That is clearly the right approach. That's where they blew it. You know, I'm not saying it would have saved Windows Phone or whatever, but why on earth, when you already have a mobile platform, would you add another mobile platform to your desktop platform? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you add the one you already have and then evolve it so that those apps make sense in both environments? You know, they eventually tried to do that with one Windows. That was the entire point, to go and do what they should have done with Windows 8. We're talking about something that happened a decade ago now. You know, that's how much time they've blown. It's over. Well, it's over. It doesn't matter how much time. Windows Phone is dead.
And I honestly think you're right that Microsoft, in its heart, doesn't care. They see a world with a variety of platforms, a variety of even chip architectures, and they're a cloud company. They're platform agnostic.
I'll tell you, through their actions, they have created a world in which there are a variety of platforms that are not run by Microsoft.
But isn't this what Satya Nadella has been saying all along?
I think he's just making the best news out of terrible news, right? Like, now, Apple, he found a way to make it look good.
Apple did say at this keynote, oh, and by the way, we've been working with Microsoft all along on this, and the office is ready to run on Apple Silicon.
You got to remember, the three guys in the office team who were working on this didn't run back to the senior leadership team and tell them as a corporate focus, we're now focused on Mac software. I mean, Microsoft has 150,000 employees. This is part of the company. I mean, if you want to do that, it was a King Solomon thing. Which of these is more important than the other? I mean, we've had this discussion. Ultimately, if you have to choose, Office is more important than Windows. It just is. Yeah, sorry.
Yep.
So, yeah, Office on the Mac is going to be great. Great.
Well, it's disappointing for people who want, you know, Windows heart. Well, I don't know. I could see. I actually was watching this and scared because I said, this is going to be such an interesting transition and potentially, you know, there's lots of slip-ups that could happen. But if it lives up to its potential, you might see a monoculture. You might see a situation where Apple is so well beyond their Apple ecosystem, by the way, not just Apple desktops and laptops, but the whole ecosystem is so far beyond anybody else's ecosystem that it's hard for anybody else to catch up. And then you get a monoculture, which is not good. You want a strong Intel, a strong AMD, a strong Windows, strong Linux. You want that.
Yep. You don't think that'll happen in PCs, though. I mean, in phones it happened.
No, I think
you
will.
You do?
I think this. Well,
what's
okay, Mary Jo, this
like
is the risk. This is the risk. What happened with iPhone, I think is about to happen on PCs.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. That's that
important. I mean, So, and I will say some of the things to look for in the next 6 to 12 months are Apple doing with the Mac what they did with the iPad. Remember, the iPad experienced 6 years of falling sales. And finally, they said, look, okay, we'll just start making these things cheaper. And now sales have exploded again. The Mac right now, they tried raising prices like they did with phones. Remember the MacBook Air, the 2018 model, when it debuted, was $1,200 instead of $999. Mm-hmm. Over the next 2 years, it came down again to $999. Well, they're making their own chips now. Now, Apple's not known for their cost cutting, but I mean, what if they could sell one of those things for $750? All of a sudden, all those people that were buying PCs, especially when you get into like a good PC territory, roughly $1,000, they're going to take a hard look at this. I'm not suggesting necessarily there's going to be some kind of resurgence or surgence of Mac sales or something. But I mean, they have the ability to make a big change that would impact their share dramatically. And the other way to look at the market is you got to remember too, from like a kind of a profits perspective, when you factor in the fact that many PC makers don't make any money at all, Apple probably makes more than 100% of the profits in this industry already.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if Apple is viable in the PC industry, I mean, why would some of these lower tier companies even bother anymore? I'm just saying anything's possible. I don't actually believe that's what's going to happen, but it's one of those, it's on the spectrum. Yeah. You got to at least consider it.
That's the thing. I mean, there's all sorts of places this could fail and stumble.
Yeah.
But
I also feel like that. Don't you guys feel like the way the PC market is evolving is at some point, everything's just going to be running virtually on a thing Absolutely. That's called a PC, right? Absolutely. So if that happens, why would you buy a Mac over a PC? Oh, like you'll just buy whatever's the cheapest or best, right?
But that's not what happens. I mean, Apple owns about 50% of the market for phones in the United States, and they own about 80% of the market for tablets. So what people really do is they buy the prettiest device that their peers are buying because there's a lot of that. My daughter is using a Mac now because her friends use a Mac. And she's already an iPhone user. I mean, that's how it happens. Yeah. So, I mean, if it doesn't matter what hardware why not buy the pretty one? Most PCs are crap. You have to spend money to get a good PC.
You totally do.
And just to make my point, aren't we kind of in the same boat now with PCs that we were in when Apple came along and said iPhone? And everybody said, yeah, come on. And then what happened is people looked at the iPhone and said, I like the iPhone. I think that's the risk. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I think it is what's going to happen. And I think that's the risk. That's a huge risk for other manufacturers.
It's absolutely a risk.
Yep. It's bad for Intel. You got to admit that, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because in PCs today, obviously, Intel is dominant. But again, you could look at it from a profit perspective. Apple tends to sell more expensive computers. That's a tough business to lose. It's going to be 2 years before it happens fully. Apple, if you listen to how they say this, by the way, I know, but if you listen to the way they describe this, they're going to be releasing Intel-based Macs over the next 2 years. They might be releasing some past that as well.
They did not say that. Well, they did not say that. What they said was, we have
it's
Intel.
It's interesting to pick it apart.
Yeah, well, let's take it apart. They said, we have Intel Macs in the pipeline. We're not done. They also said, we will continue to support our Intel Macs for years.
That's a completely
years
different thing.
To come. That's two different things. Right. And I think really most importantly, what's really going to come down to is, I think Apple's going to do it in a year. I think you're going to see, and already this is what Ming-Chi Kuo, who watches the supply side, says, Apple will have one Apple Silicon laptop this year, and all releases starting in 2021 will be on Apple Silicon. Why not? The only lagging indicator is developers, and Apple has done this.
No, they're going to jump right on this. This is
exactly like what they did with the Intel
Apple's
transition.
Biggest advantage
with the Intel transition, they said 2 years; it was 9 months.
Yeah.
With the Intel transition, they continue to sell a few power PCs. They were already in the pipeline, but they trickled off real quick. Because who's going to buy an Intel Mac today?
Well, I mean, honestly, if it's a pro device, it might make sense. We have to wait and see what they release on the ARM side. But, by the way, like I think you said it, that test kit they're giving out is based on the same chipset that's in an iPad.
It's an iPad.
That's no, but that's important because one of the big claims that Apple fans or whatever have been, you know, making for the past few years is that these A series chips are somehow way better than Intel chips. And I've always kind of said, well, that's nonsense. You don't have an apples to apples comparison to make there. We don't have Mac OS or Windows running on one of these things. How could you possibly know that? But when we see Windows running on ARM, it runs like crap. So, like, what are you talking about? But see, Apple's been doing this secretly, in the, you know, in their little labs and you know, like the Get Smart thing they were doing. And they have been adapting these chips. This is where, again, making everything yourself is a huge advantage. Because remember, the first Qualcomm-based PC that came out, the first two were based on the 835, which is the same chipset that was in phones. Those things ran like crap. They were terrible.
It was awful.
They did I don't remember the whole lineage, but it was 845, 850. And then eventually, of course, internally between them, Qualcomm and Microsoft were like, well, look, we got to adapt these chips to the unique needs of PCs. This is never going to work. And that's cool. And that's how the 8CX happened. It's how Microsoft's SQ1 happened. But you start losing stuff at that point because those things don't get killer battery life like the early ones did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on the Qualcomm Microsoft side, where this is not a big deal for either one of these companies, let's be honest, that's the level of attention these things get. You're sacrificing something. You're just always going to – that's the problem. Now, the dream is that that won't always be the case. On the Apple side, they're making this entire transition, and their argument is it can't fail. It has to work or we're not doing
they're
it.
They're all in.
They're doing it.
And I don't think they'd be doing it. Look, this is a company that is worth $1.5 trillion, has more than $200 billion in the bank.
Yeah,
this is not a company that's dipping its toe. They're saying we're betting a $1.5 trillion company that this will work.
Yep.
The other thing I think this is what's really larger is what is the fate of x86 now? Because an x86, let's face it, it is antiquated. Intel wanted to move off it 10 years ago with Itanium. Right. And only because Intel's fabs failed, they couldn't do it. They had to go back to the drawing board with x86. That thing's been moribund for a decade. And by the way, even Linus Torvalds said the only reason you don't see more ARM Linux is because servers aren't yet running ARM. Well, guess what? Servers are moving to ARM. So Linux will move to ARM painlessly. It already runs on ARM. It already runs fine on ARM. So that's going to be a painless transition. I hope Windows can make that transition, but I think really the real bottom line on this is RIP x86.
Yeah, no, you're right. Windows can, of course, make this transition. The thing that holds back Windows is that thing I brought up front. Microsoft can't say goodbye to anything. We've spent you can go all the way back to 2012 and Windows RT, and then you go forward to Windows 10 on ARM and Windows in S mode and these container things that are coming in Windows 10X, or maybe they're just coming in Windows. Like, they have been struggling with how do we move forward while bringing forward everything? Whereas Apple has always been, well, how do we move forward, you know? And they've been much more aggressive about cutting off old technology. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when Mac OS X first came out, the story about Apple would have been, well, yeah, but they can do that because, you know, they're a smaller company. They don't have as many customers. It's easier. Their customers tend to be more engaged and able and willing to do what Apple says. Today, Apple is the mass market. They have 2 billion customers. You can't make that argument anymore. They're still doing it. It's just good leadership. I mean, don't we just have to admit that?
Here's where, you know, Microsoft kind of lost out. They had mobile.
Yep.
They lost in mobile. And then all of a sudden, Apple is most 99% of that 2 billion is an iPhone, right? So what makes sense? What's our strongest product? iPhone. Well, great. Let's draft off that. And that's basically what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, look, the future of Microsoft is literally in the cloud. And
it's the cloud.
You know, you just said something that reminded me of something. You know, people talk, if you think about the video game business, Microsoft has lost in the console wars the last only three generations it's ever competed in. People say, well, why is Microsoft still in the gaming business? And it's because, well, the future is in the cloud. And that's where they have a strength. Like, they'll probably do pretty well in that, actually. They're not going to do well in consoles. They'll probably do good. And that's, you know, you're making lemonade here. It's like life has handed you this basket of lemons and this other thing becomes the future. And it's not the Windows Office stuff that we remember from the 1990s. And that's what Apple did too. Apple was failing with the Mac. They didn't, it wasn't going to be the future of the company. And they started looking into these little mobile devices, starting with the iPod, then the iPhone, and then the iPad, and then the Apple Watch. And, oh, my God, they're the biggest company on earth, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they made lemonade. Mm-hmm. So, what, you know, whatever. I mean, Nintendo used to make board games or something back in the day. Companies change over time. Yeah. But I don't know. I care about Windows so much. And I hate to see it is like.
I think Windows on Apple Silicon is a great idea.
Parallels.
I buy into it. Look, the future, look, it is in the cloud and it is heterogeneous devices and it is. You bring your own services, whatever, you know, whatever combination of things you like to use. I admit that the future, in some ways, it doesn't matter, you know, what people are going to use, and we'll see what happens. But I'm still, whatever, I'm 53 years old. I grew up with Windows. It's what I know. It's what I care about. And I see something like this, and it's like watching Muhammad Ali get in the ring for the last time. You're like, why are you still fighting?
Yeah, that's right.
You are just, you're just getting the shit kicked out of you, and it's embarrassing.
But, Paul, it's not Microsoft. It's not Windows. It's x86. Let's really, I mean, really, that's what's happening.
Okay.
And that's not, so I'm not that attached to x86. Surely you're not.
No, not at all.
I mean, honestly, it's not, there hasn't been a mobile device running on an Intel x86 processor.
Yeah, I know. So, someone today in the comments said something like, you know, Android runs can run on x86 as well. And yeah, you're right. But today, why? It does that for virtual emulation environments for developers. Yeah. It's the only reason. You'll never find anyone shipping an Intel-based.
I think the writing has been on the wall. It's just we haven't caught up to it. I mean, when mobile took over, really, mobile's what percentage of computing is now mobile? Far more than half. I don't know what the number is. Probably 80 or 90%.
Oh, it's way more than that. Yeah. No, it's way more.
So. And x86 has zero place in 80% of all computing?
Even in a bad year, Leo, mobile sells over 8 times as many devices than PCs. It's not even close.
So you're saying, I mean, that's the writing on the wall. It's been and Intel struggled. They tried with scale, the M-Scale. They wanted to make mobile.
Oh, right. So, by the way, sorry. I just wanted to someone's point. I'm sorry. I don't remember who. The point of Windows 10 on ARM originally was to get Intel to wake up, right? In other words, if Intel had created a lot, like just this past month, they released a big, small chip design that's kind of like ARM with like one big core and four small cores. That's what Microsoft wanted Intel to do 10 years ago, right? Like, you have to be able to compete with ARM. And Intel was like, look, more gigahertz. You know, and it's like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. That's good. But we need this other thing. You know, you're supposed to be the market leader. You should be able to do this. They couldn't even hit 10 nanometers for 4 years. So, I mean, that was the point. I mean, like, another from Microsoft's perspective, maybe I did say this. Microsoft didn't care who won or if anyone won. They just wanted the industry to get to this place. The problem is Apple, by controlling the entire widget, the entire stack, can just take their ecosystem to this place. And they just did. It's a huge advantage.
Yeah, and I don't think necessarily it means Windows can't come along for the ride. I don't know what the problem. I mean, okay, there's another problem, which is that Qualcomm sucks too. That's the real problem. If there were a company making ARM chips as good as Apple.
Well, but you kind of implicitly raised this issue. So here's Qualcomm. They control the non-Apple part of the mobile world. They literally are probably 80 to 90% of it. That market is 80 to 90% of the personal computing market. How much effort are you going to put in grabbing that last little 10% that Microsoft has? I mean, who cares?
Who cares?
Like, if this fails, you know, who cares? I do think we're going to see ARM PCs, and Intel style ARM, you know, ARM type PCs, but and Chromebooks too, right? I mean, and Linux PCs, and this has to happen. But this might be, I mean, this is like this really has the feel of a don't look back moment, and I don't know. Remember before this happened, we talked about this is going to be some spectrum of possibilities from, we're not really doing much to, oh my God, we're going all in. And they really nailed it on the far end of that spectrum. That tells me that they're super, this is a conservative company. You know, they make a lot of stupid press claims and everything, but I mean, they don't announce stuff until it's like they're sure about it. I mean, they've had, you know, they make mistakes, but Like, this is architectural. I mean, this is serious.
Hearing you guys talk about this, the thing that keeps coming back into my mind is part of what's shrinking is the PC form factor, right? Like, that's the part of the market that's contracting, whether you call it laptops, ultrabooks, PCs, clamshells, whatever. So does it really matter if they're winning in a market that's shrinking? Because who is going to be using a PC in 10 years? Like, right now, none of my nieces who are in their 20s care about even having a PC. And I don't think if Apple made one, that would convince them to take it. It's just that they don't see the need for that form factor, right?
But do they ever have to write something or use a spreadsheet or make a presentation or...
Go to work and use the PC that's at work, but it's so seldom. It's kind of like printing at home anymore, right? Like, some people still print at home sometimes, but how many?
Oh, absolutely. Anymore, well, right? By the way, so not to get off on that tangent, but I mean, people who are working from home now or have kids who have school projects might be printing from home. I mean, I don't that's print true. Personally, yeah. but I mean, I have felt for a long time that as PCs become the secondary device, they're less necessary. They don't get updated as often. But sometimes you need the big screen, the keyboard, the mouse, you know, because you're doing something that is a little difficult to do on a tiny screen, whatever. So, they're still necessary. But then there are the special use cases of gaming, software development,
design,
engineering. Right. Yeah, all that architecture, whatever. And we can think of that as kind of a workstation class device. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel, you know, there'll always be the need for that.
But that's small.
It's small, but it's lucrative. See, and that's kind of where Apple excels, right? I mean, we have a premium PC market right now because of Apple.
Right.
The other PC makers saw how Apple was killing it with even small market share.
Right.
And they all said, we got to get involved in that, you know?
Yeah. Like,
and
Surface,
some of them do pretty good jobs.
That's why Microsoft came
Surface
in.
Surface is one of those. Yeah. HP has premium Leap Books and Spectres and stuff. All of them do. ThinkPad is one of those companies or one of those brands. Steve Jobs car truck thing is kind of interesting in retrospect because, of course, trucks are the best selling vehicles in the world. And so we have to come up with a different comparison. And what is Windows now? Is it like a electric bicycle? Is it a moped? What are we talking about here? Yeah. Like a donkey with a blanket on it? I mean, like, where? I don't know.
Strange. I guess I feel like we're thinking about the market as growing just because Apple is now in it, right? But I don't think that's actually the right way to think about it. Right. I think the market's going to keep shrinking even if Apple's in it. And so, okay, Microsoft's share may go down, but Microsoft cares less and less about the PC space, as we always talk about on the show, and care more about people using the cloud, right?
Well, so what I've heard privately is that Panos does intend to make a big splash with Windows, that there's fun stuff coming, and I want to get excited about it, you know. Yeah. But I look at Windows today, and I think what this thing really needs is not excitement and new. It needs consistency, efficiency. Yeah. It needs what Apple just did. Which
updates that don't break when they come out.
That'd be
the
nice. Microsoft talks a good game about privacy, right? Apple does too, but Microsoft still gives you a Windows OS where you can't turn off all the tracking. Can't turn it off. There's not even a secret way to do it. There's just no way to do it. Yep. And it's a big difference between talking about something and then doing it. You know, Microsoft's been talking about this Fluent thing for however many years. And I know you can't see it, but I can see it. And it's only in some places. It's not everywhere. I can tell you that. I don't know. Up and down we go. You know, we got different. I don't know. It's frustrating. Thank you
it
for
is.
Not going.
I also think, you know, even though the total PC market has declined, like it used to be 1.5 billion Windows devices and now it's one, right? Or something like that. That 1 billion is still a really big number, right? Okay.
That's true.
There's a lot of momentum behind it. And there are people who are using PCs now who use them because they either have to because of a work requirement or because it runs a certain kind of software that one day may be ported natively to ARM, but isn't going to be for a while, you know, dentist office, those kinds of things. And so that it's going to stick around just by like its own
inertia,
momentum.
Hey, I see
right?
Model inertia. T's driving yeah. down the street all the time. It doesn't mean that's the future of cars.
No, it's right. It may not be the future, but it gives Microsoft something away. To ride until yeah. the cloud well, but really becomes. Actually,
okay, Azure is something for Microsoft to ride. They've got a nice yeah, big totally. Pony to ride.
They
you,
do.
You just pointed out an interesting opportunity because there are a billion people plus right. using PCs, right? So that's a big market. And eventually those guys are going to upgrade
how
or
long,
move along.
Yeah, how long are those PCs going to stay in operation?
Right.
Well,
because they
know.
Don't
I mean,
last forever. But.
10 years?
I don't think they all disappear, for one thing. Well, I mean, some of them have
they
to.
They disappear after a decade?
No, I mean in the sense that. The PC goes away and they're like, I don't need PCs anymore. I think some number of them are going to get something else. Maybe it's a Chromebook. Maybe it's a Mac. Maybe it's a Windows PC. I don't know. Maybe it's an iPad.
Pro, in business, it's likely to be a thin client that mm-hmm. runs on mm-hmm. Azure.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
Right. That's an almost transparent transition for business.
Yeah.
You're going right. to say, take my Lenovo running Windows 10. Replace it with a Lenovo that looks exactly the same.
Right. That's
as a, like it's a thin client. Yeah. And it's connected to a much more secure, much more reliable cloud. I don't have to worry about 2004 or 2509 mm-hmm. because right. I have always the latest versions.
All right. Well, there are lucrative, smallish markets for gamers, programmers, power users of all kinds, creators. Yep. Apple wants those guys, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, a little fun part of the Apple lock-in that no one really talks about, and I'm probably going to write about soon, is the developer space, right? If you want to target Apple's devices, you have to have a Mac.
Yes.
And that's true even if you use a tool like Xamarin Forms on a PC or Flutter, cross-platform tools like those. You still need to have a Mac in the chain somewhere. You can't build an iOS app. Or an iPad OS app without one.
You could, but you'd have to bring it to a friend's house.
Yeah, well, that's what.
can you run my software?
Well, you can't even run it. You can't even run an emulator.
They don't have emulators. Like this.
Nope. There's only Android emulators. So if you want to do everything,
you're right. Because Apple locks it down. That's right.
You have to have a Mac, and that's kind of messed up when you think about it. Mm-hmm. But that's, I guess, their prerogative. But yeah, so I, you know, whatever. They're never going to change that. I can tell you that. So there you go.
I mean, this isn't going to happen overnight. It's not going to even happen overnight for Apple. But
no.
It's I think, a sign of the times. And I think it's the sign that finally, and I don't, by the way, I'm not going to miss Win32 and I'm not going to miss x86. Those are legacy technologies that should have been gone a long time ago.
Pains me to say this, Leo, but you are correct. Win32 was wrong when they did it. That's what bugs me about it.
Honestly, x86, I've written x86 assembly code. It's the ugliest thing you ever wrote in your life. It's horrible.
MFC against that, but I hear you. But that's fine.
The memory segmented model is garbage. That segmented memory model literally goes back to the 8080 processor.
Or 8080. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 8080. Yeah.
I mean, what? and we're still using that?
Yeah.
Not to, I mean, Intel has fumbled it in many ways, too. I mean, problems with
you,
all
you
of,
mentioned Itanium. AMD was the company that came up with X64 that even made that possible to move forward.
Right.
It was an Israeli company that came up with the multi-core stuff that they finally bought and made that go forward. They still, I mean, I don't know how many times you get a problem with a taser before they figure it out, but it's like, guys, you got to move into the future. Let's go. And they're like, look, we have multiple cores. And blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's nice. The whole planet is on these tiny, thin and light devices. Could you, you know, and when you put one of your chips in, it sounds like a jet engine. You know, they have literally fumbled the future. Just like AT&T before them, yes. Fumbled.
And we talked a lot about first-line workers. So I think that there's a whole category of first-line workers that will be holding iPads.
Yep. Of course they will. In ruggedized cases.
They'll have to get a lot cheaper, though, right? Or no?
$329.
No, they're already cheap. That's the thing.
You can get one for $300 now.
Yeah, so you get one for $250.
I actually tell people to get those because if you get, you can get something cheaper, but you'd be making a big mistake. You know, it's an expensive, cheap machine.
Oh, that's what I meant. They lowered the prices on the iPad. Like before you said, well, it's a little expensive, but it's the best tablet. Now it's like, no, it's the best tablet. Oh, by the way, they're not expensive.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it's good. So first line workers, they're holding the, you know, they're using the stick 'em and putting it on their fingers and holding it like that. I think thin clients in a look, there are still people, Lisa's talking to somebody, old friend, who's got QuickBooks on-prem.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's got, they've got all these issues.
Clearly.
She could log into their QuickBooks online if they had it online, but no, they're on-prem. But everybody's going to go, I mean, QuickBooks, we've been using QuickBooks online for years. Mm-hmm. All you need is a thin client or a Mac for that matter.
Now that we've completely pissed off everyone listening to this, I just
we're telling the truth, Paul.
I think because I feel like I have to communicate this sometimes. This comes from a place of love. I want Windows to be better.
You know who this doesn't surprise at all? Satya Nadella.
No, it doesn't.
He's totally been playing this game from the moment he took office.
Right. Yeah.
He knows what's going down.
Right.
Why do you think he says, you know, we want to be everywhere our customers are?
Right. Because, like Paul said at the beginning, you know what matters the most to Microsoft? The cloud and Office. That's what matters.
Yep. Right.
And Office as a cloud service, basically. I mean,
So
it's really just those old timers are going, oh, I'm going to miss you. X86. I'm going to miss
you. As long as you run some Microsoft software somewhere, that makes him happy.
When you look at
he's known this was going to happen.
They pushed, Microsoft pushed Windows into Microsoft 365. You know, over time, no doubt about it, it becomes the least important part of Microsoft 365. I mean, the other stuff is all literally cloud-based services. And then, you know, the downloadable Office apps, which, by the way, work on mobile and on the Mac. You know, so, yeah, they don't care.
Yep.
That's my problem. They don't care.
They don't care. They care, but their mind is gone beyond it. How much time is it going to
be before, you know, Windows is based on Unix or Linux or something. It's like, guys, nobody cares. They don't. That would require them to
care. They don't really care.
They don't care.
They don't care.
They don't.
You know, and it's not, I mean, they have Windows running on ARM. That's not, they did it before Apple did it. I mean.
No, and they're still investing in Windows. Like we know Windows 10X is being built and that is supposed to give them a better, you know, UI that'll kind of carry them forward. So it's not like they're just saying, you know, we totally don't care. We're done. I mean, they're still employing a lot of people working on Windows, and they're going to ride Windows as long as they can. They will, but it's just not priority one for them. Even when Panos is there, that doesn't really change it.
Well, it's priority one for me, and I'm getting tired of this crap.
Sorry, dude.
A good conversation. And now, Mary Jo, you're really up to speed because that's really, I think...
Yeah, that's what I figured. I'm like, you guys are going to tell me what matters. So I'm like, here we are.
I mean this seriously. If you watch the video of the keynote, it has little chapter markers. And the very last one is the bit of, it just says Mac. But what it's about is this transition. You should watch that. It is a, it is very well done. And I think speaks to, and by the way, you know, we complain about Microsoft not being able to communicate all the time. Watch this with that frame of mind and watch how they communicate what they're doing. It's it's the level of communication I've always wanted. It's like when you meet your friends, you meet your friends' parents and they're awesome. And you're like, how come you can't be my parents?
I wish you were my girlfriend.
Right.
You know what? Like I said to you guys last week, I've only watched one Apple keynote. I forget which one it was, but I couldn't believe how awful and corny and terrible it was. And I was just like, I will never watch another one
again. Let me help you sell it. I'll help sell you on this. This one is particularly good to watch.
It's pre-recorded
because there's no audience. There's no audience.
It's pre-recorded. Right, that helps. That helps a lot.
It's heavily edited. It's a little. Yeah. There's some dad jokes.
Yeah.
Greg Federighi can't help himself.
That's just standard, though, right? Like you can't let
this joke go. Anyway, but that's okay. Don't worry about that stuff.
Yeah.
It was well done.
Okay.
It's
You know what? One day when I'm really bored and.
Right? I'm not. It's not like I've been pushing Apple on you for 8 years, and I'm like, seriously, when are you going to get the message?
You don't have to watch it, Mary Jo, because all of that is important for developers or people who are trying to watch the road ahead. You're going to see it happen. And
right. And I also read a lot about it. So yeah, I feel like I'm good.
I mean, you can if you want. Actually, the second keynote is probably of more interest to us. It's the State of the Union keynote. And that's where they do the deep dive. Remember, and one of the things that was clear in the State of the Union, Apple's been here before. So they're calling their intermediate technologies, like they're doing a universal binary, universal binary 2, because we did this last time. They're calling Rosetta, Rosetta 2, because remember when we moved to Intel? We have some experience doing this. We did that in 9 months. And I think that that's their... I think they know how to do it, and they're kind of relying on the fact that they did it successfully once before, and it was a very good move, right? The move from PowerPC to Intel.
Meanwhile, over in Microsoft land, you could bring up a DOS app from 1987. It'll still run fine on Windows because, you know, no code left behind. That's the Microsoft.
There's some advantage to having small market share. You can, you know, you can say,
don't have small market share. Like, I mean,
Paul, but no code left behind is the reason people stay as businesses with Microsoft.
But that's why thin clients are going to, the next computer you buy will not be, I don't think it'll be a real computer. You're gonna ride this one into the dust and you're going to get a thin client. The only thing holding it back is reliable internet.
You know what I feel like though? I feel like year of the thin client is like year of the Linux desktop. We've heard about it for like a decade, right?
It just makes a lot of sense, you know? I mean,
it does. It makes a ton of sense, but it just never has happened.
Yeah. So I think the thing that will put it over the top is sophisticated web apps, right? Where you really don't need much on the client. It's all coming over the internet. And we already kind of, we're already baby stepping into that.
Yeah.
Even on Windows, you know?
Like virtual machines and Windows Virtual
Desktop.
Well,
no, just, I mean, web apps. Like most people spend the day in the web. I mean, I use Notepad, I use Word, but I mean, you could bring up Word online and write in that. Never even touch a client app other than the browser.
I never use regular Word ever anymore.
I do a lot of my stuff server side, even though I have a computer with a CPU. I have a nice server running in here. I can run VS Code on it. And the reason that I'm moving more and more in that direction is I have multiple endpoints, right?
Exactly.
And so if you only had one computer.
Documents stored on one computer that's in the other room.
That's the worst.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yes. But you want to make sure everything's in the cloud.
As that becomes more and more common. And look, people are going to be working from home for a while. I mean, not just till COVID goes away, but I think this is a transition. I think you could easily see a hot swapping computers where you just log in. That's why you want a thin client. You log in. Everything you do is server side.
I know.
And it's going to be called the BT180.
You would love that, Mary Jo, because you would have you would have Notepad in all your articles no matter where you went.
I would love it. Nope, I would love it. If it ever happens, I will be like right there and all in. I will.
Once Notepad is available as a cloud service, you could just use a Mac.
It won't
even
matter.
I'm never
going to
use a Mac.
Well, that's fine. You don't have to. it won't matter what you use. It really won't.
There's a limit. There's a real limit, guys. The limit is the word Apple for me. But anything other than Apple.
To stop day drinking.
Anything other than Apple.
You might.
I would use a Chromebook before I would use an Apple computer.
You might, though, remember, you might be exiling yourself to the island of lost chips because you might be saying, well, I won't use Apple. Well, good. Here's a Qualcomm chip. Enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah, I can't stress this enough. I kind of can't stand Apple, but seriously. What they're doing is amazing. It's amazing. And I think we need to be open-eyed about that. That's all.
And, you know,
I even
do my blog.
I figured you meant me.
And you, in a way, I bet you do this in a way. One of the reasons you could use Notepad, Mary Jo, is because you have a content management system running server-side. And you just paste into that.
Mary
Jo,
let me tell you about the full frontal nerdity that is something called text edit, which is like Notepad on steroids. And you know where it is? It's on the Mac. You'll love it.
but you can use your computer the way you use it because honestly, what you really are doing is server side. You're just doing local notes that you put on the CMS.
I am.
Yeah.
Right. And I save all my documents in OneDrive on the cloud. Like I don't save them locally.
You're using your computer as a thin client.
I am.
I think you need to change your Twitter bio now to read future text edit user.
No, I don't see Mary Jo ever using Mac OS. I don't. I actually don't see that. That's not, and I don't think you'll need to. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that'll matter.
I'm just kidding.
Honestly, I blog now.
Obviously, the future is Vim or...
The way I blog is I run a local Markdown client, and right. I have...
What's a Markdown client to use, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I highly recommend Typora, Typora. Yeah, it's free now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. By the way, Mary Jo, I mean, seriously, you'd love it.
Much better than Notepad.
I mean that non-sarcastically.
It has a clean window if you want. You don't have any widgets or anything. It's just a piece of paper. It's beautiful. But the best part about Typora is my file system on my server, my blog here, is mounted using SSHFS onto every computer I have. So it looks like I'm operating on local files. But when I save that file, the server rebuilds the website automatically. So it looks like I'm working completely locally, and I'm not.
Typora is basically like a thin, light, rich text editor. It's marked down in the back end.
It's beautiful.
But you don't think about the code. Beautiful. You just write it.
I can drag an image to Typora, and it automatically uploads it to the server, puts it in the right spot, and it's now server side. I can go on and on. It's really a nicely done app.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I can't use Typora for the book because I have specific requirements that are kind of technical, but but as a simple word processor or
perfect for that.
Typora is beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's an excellent application.
Yeah, I'm glad you know about it. I thought I discovered this thing because it's a weird open source project.
To it. If I could have used it for the book as well, I would stop using Word and just use that for everything. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's open source. It's on the Mac, Windows, Linux. Yep.
It's very small. It's not like a big, heavy application.
And it's not, I don't think it's Electron. It's like just a nice little, they've done a nice
job. I don't know what it's made with.
Yeah. But. And Markdown is nice. Do you use Markdown, either of you? No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Every day. It's what the book's written is in
Markdown. Okay. And
I use something called Markdown Pad 2, which is
Markdown
super
Pad's
out
good.
Of date.
I used it.
It's never been updated. So I have a specific version of like a developer DLL and the last version of Markdown Pad, and it still works great. It's excellent, but you know, the clock is ticking, obviously, on that thing.
Yeah. And it's only because Ziff Davis has some antiquated CMS, probably.
No, our CMS is pretty modern.
Is it new?
It's custom built. Yeah. Okay, we use the one CNET uses with some customizations for us. Yeah. So it's new.
Is it so it's literally custom and not based on like WordPress?
I think probably long ago based on WordPress, but then completely built
highly
up
customized.
So it doesn't look anything like it.
Well, WordPress supports Markdown, actually. WordPress has a very nice Markdown editor. So I don't know if that's available to you, but you could be using it.
Yeah.
Thing is, you got a good work. The thing is, why change anything? It's so perfect workflow. You're happy. So.
I know. If it works for you, I feel like, and you don't really need to mess with it, why mess with it?
I was looking for a way that I could blog because it's already bad enough to force myself to write. Any speed bump at all, I'm going to go, So I was looking for a way where I could just like open a page, like as easy as tweeting.
Just
it has
go,
to be as
right.
easy as tweeting. Yeah. And so I kind of cobbled together this system, and actually it works pretty well for me now.
Yeah.
That's cool. Let's take a break. There's lots more to talk about, including, as long as we're talking about Apple, Microsoft is not happy.
Let's talk about it from the other side.
He's not happy. Yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of on Microsoft's side on this one. So we'll talk about that in just a bit. Plus, there is Microsoft 365 and Xbox news. And yes. And
Windows 10 on ARM death clock countdown continues after this.
our show today brought to you by Roman. I am very happy to be a spokesman for Roman, to be promoting Roman, because I know as a guy, the last thing we guys do is go to the doctor, you know? There's a lot of evidence that show that guys who have a significant other are healthier. And I don't think it's because they got somebody to cuddle at night. I think it's because the significant other goes, you're going to the doctor and that's final. They make us go. But no guy wants to go to the doctor. We grew up, you know, coaches told, rub some dirt on it. Walk it off. No crying. There's no crying in baseball. And so we learn to be stoic. But you don't have to be stoic anymore. There are ways to go to the doctor, and this is actually very timely, without taking the chance of going and sitting in a waiting room and visiting a doctor and being embarrassed to say, "Doc, I need some help, for instance, with erectile dysfunction." Something that happens to a lot of people, and it can be a sign of an underlying condition. You don't want to just go and, you know, order some from some sketch online pharmacy. You really want to talk to a doctor about it. And actually, that's how Roman got started. You might have seen the TV ads. A young guy, entrepreneur, his father was a doctor, and it was hard to talk about. He was in his 20s. "Dad, I'm having some problems in the sack." And the dad said, and they did a workup, but it was a sign. And it inspired him to start Roman, which is basically a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor, a real live doctor licensed in your state. And it can be for a variety of conditions. ED, of course, sexual health of all kinds. I actually also take some testosterone vitamins that they offer. They're great. And they come in little packs, very easy to use. They do hair. They do skin. Prostate health, bone health. But the point is, it starts with an actual conversation, telemedicine, with a physician. Discreet professional care. It's a digital health clinic for men. We need it. And you know what? It's that same speed bump. If I have to drive down, wear a mask, sanitize, get my temperature taken, ask some questions just to visit a doctor, these days you're not going to do that. And even when you didn't have to do that, you didn't really want to do that. But now if you take out that speed bump and say, look, you do it on your computer right now, or your phone. Grab your phone or your computer. You'll get a free, complete online visit. You'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. If the doctor says the treatment's right for you, that's really important. They don't just write a script. Your medication can be shipped right to your door with free two-day shipping, and you get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. By the way, they now have generics for ED, which really saves you a lot of money. I mean, a significant amount of money. And there's no commitment. You can cancel anytime. I'm really happy to be talking about this because I know we have a lot of guys listening. I know because I see them in the chat room. They haven't been to the doctor in a while. Let Roman be the source of your wellness. When's the last time you went to the doctor? It's been a while, I bet. Go to GetRoman.com/windows for a free online visit, free two-day shipping. GetRoman.com/windows for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. It's a good thing. Roman. GetRoman.com/windows. Do use that address, by the way. We thank Roman for supporting us. But also, we thank you for using that address because that lets them know you heard it here. So, I actually subscribe. I set up and asked for an invite and subscribed to Hey.com. This is a new email program from Jason Fried and David Hanemeyer Hansen, who are legendary in our business. They created Basecamp, DHH.
Which we use, by the way, at work.
Yeah, Basecamp's awesome. DHH invented Ruby on Rails. So these guys are legendary. They decided they want to take on email. And it's an interesting email program. It's going to be $99 a year. They submitted it to Apple. Apple initially accepted it and then rejected them and said, nope.
Well, rejected an update, which was just bug fixes.
Right. Because
this is the problem. So
they said, this program doesn't do anything unless you pay on some other site, $99. We don't want our users to download programs that don't do anything. You need to put in.
You mean like Netflix?
They call those programs reader programs, okay? So there is an exemption for Kindle, Netflix. You're buying that stuff off site, but it's a
reader. This is arbitrary and ridiculous.
Completely. Spotify's complained about it. Lots have. Right. Hey, maybe David saw this as a way to get some publicity. That's for sure true. But he was incensed. Now, they have worked out a deal, by the way, and they are updating Hey.com on the iPhone now.
Well, see, the thing is, they haven't actually worked out a deal. Apple subtly announced that they were making changes to where they do things that not coincidentally applies to Hey, but will now apply to everyone going forward.
They're going to have an appeal process now, which is they've never had before.
Right. And coincidentally, happened a week after the EU announced two antitrust investigations in Apple, one of them being for this very practice.
Yeah. So David said, I don't want to pay Apple's 30%. I'm not going to do an in-app purchase because Apple will take 30%. Why should they get 30%?
Right.
So I think what they came up with was is a free or low cost. I can't remember. They came up with some sort of workaround so that you could download the app and do something and start using it right away.
Okay.
But this is the debate, though, also, is should Apple be taking 30% of everything?
That's insane on a subscription service.
Yeah.
You know, you buy, you decide to pay for Office or Microsoft 365 Family. It's $99. Mm-hmm. Apple gets whatever that is, $30.
Yep.
For doing what? I mean, it doesn't cost Apple any more for you using an app on their device than a free app. I mean, anyway, whatever. But I was interested and surprised to discover that Microsoft is among the companies that has come out publicly to complain about this practice, which I think, most people, not all people for sure, because I hear from all people, unfortunately, but most sane people with logical brains would agree that is an onerous fee,
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens. But actually, just today, the DOJ and several states revealed that they, too, are going to look into an antitrust investigation of Apple for this very thing.
Yeah. Didn't Microsoft fight Apple when they first were going to put Office subscription in the store?
Yeah. So the way you fight them is you just don't let – here's the – so I should say there are multiple problems. It's not just the fee. I hear from people like, I'm an Apple developer. I can read a contract. I don't see what the problem is, yeah. The problem is you're not a $15 billion corporation selling a subscription service that generates, hundreds of millions of dollars a quarter that you're just giving a third of for nothing to Apple. That's the difference. But it's not just that, right? There's the secret policies. No one knows why things are rejected. In Basecamp or Hayes case, 1.0 was accepted without question. 1.1 was rejected, even though it was just bug fixes, And it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Apple has a habit of, competing against companies in the store as well. And that's another thing. They're not subject to these fees, et cetera, et cetera. But in Microsoft's case, what they did originally with what at the time was Office 365 was, two things. Apple prevents you from, as a developer, from communicating with your customers that there's another way to pay for stuff. So if you don't want Apple to get the 30%, you can't put a note in your app that says, hey, by the way, to use this, you have to go to the website. They don't even let you do that. Like, that's crazy.
Right. Isn't that Apple why Amazon filed them on Kindle because of that, right?
Amazon just doesn't do anything. There's no store inside the app. They just don't do it.
Right.
So you just have to go as a Kindle
Audible
user.
Has started allowing you to buy books, but I think the loophole...
This is a loophole.
You buy credits ahead of time, and you can use your credits... Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, but they
but you still
do that
don't
for
get
years.
Access to the full store.
You
yeah.
don't?
Yeah.
It looks
no.
like you do. I think I can search the store now and everything. This was a change. This was a fairly recent change. Yeah, I can buy, but I have credits, right? So maybe, I don't know. But this is part of the problem.
But those are free if you have a subscription.
Part of the problem is Apple's inconsistent in how it applies this, right? That's the real.
Yes, of course. And they're right. And the problem is they've been shown to treat competitors differently, one thing. But the not being able to communicate with your customer kind of thing is tough. How Microsoft could get away around some of it is, if you remember the policy on Office apps on mobile, is if the screen is a small enough size, you get a bunch of free functionality.
That's right.
Remember that? But it was really small.
Anything, it does do something. It's fine.
Yeah.
But they still can't in the app say, hey, by the way, to get they can say something like, to get full functionality, you need a subscription. But there's no link to that thing.
Right.
Apple doesn't offer multiple payment systems, even though a lot of these companies have their own payment systems. They don't allow you to do that, et cetera, et cetera. So I believe I could be wrong, but I think over time, in fact, like anyone could do this. If you download like one of the those apps, I think now they've just given in and they will. Because I think what they're betting on is that most people won't approach Microsoft from an iPhone and then say, yeah, I do want to pay for this. Here's $99. Mm-hmm. Like most people don't make a purchase like that on the phone, although actually iPhone is mine. But so I think that was the thinking that it's just not going to happen that much in our case. Mm-hmm. But when you're an Audible or a Kindle or a Spotify, where we're talking about single digit number of dollars, people make those purchases all the time. And for like an ebook or an audiobook, probably, or for a music, certainly, these things are on razor thin margins as it is. So you're effectively, in Apple's case, you're disadvantaging a competitor because, by the way, Apple sells books, ebooks, and music services. Spotify is 30% more expensive to run on iOS than it is on Android for this reason. And more to the point, is 30% more expensive than Apple Music. Not to the end user, to the service. Like they have to lose money on that customer so Apple doesn't get them. Mm. This is why they're in antitrust trouble, folks. This is,
yeah, exactly.
It's also why it's complicated.
It's a real problem.
Yeah, it's a complicated
issue. Well, here's one way to put it in perspective. What's a credit card fee look like on a transaction? Is it 30% or is it 2 or 3%?
Right.
Okay, so why does Apple deserve more, 10 times as much money for using their system than MasterCard does for you using their system when you buy dinner or buy a laptop or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, the richest company on earth, guys, are, you know, they need those pennies. They need the 30%. Well, but you know what? It doesn't matter what anyone thinks about it.
It's going to happen. Didn't Francis X. Shaw or somebody write a letter of support criticizing Apple?
Yeah, Brad Smith.
Brad Smith did.
Right.
Former chief legal officer or whatever he is. I think he's the president now.
Yeah, I think he's both still, yeah.
Yeah, no, he said antitrust regulators need to look into this. You know?
Yeah. He also said in there when he was doing an interview with Politico that what Apple's doing now is worse, way worse than what we did when we were up for antitrust. I'm like,
here's the problem. So the Apples and the Amazons and the Googles of the world, who are all just as terrible as Microsoft ever was,
right,
are operating in a market that is far bigger than the market that Microsoft dominated in the 1990s.
That's true.
The PC market back then was probably 100 million units a year and a couple hundred million units out in the world. These companies impact billions of users, billions. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
It is, whether Apple is a worse company than Microsoft was, because Microsoft had incredibly bad behavior with which I am all too familiar. Apple's, you know, crappy in their own way. But I mean, whatever. That doesn't really matter. This isn't about morals or whatever, right? This is about the law. And everyone is an antitrust expert now. Apple doesn't have 50% market share. They're not a monopoly. Okay. That's cute. But Apple has a market that is billions of people. The impact they have is enormous. In the United States and in most of Western Europe, somewhere between 40 and 50% market share. They're dominant. Those are the types of businesses that need to be looked at by regulatory bodies. That's all. But we'll see. I suspect this is all going to change. And by the way, the thing that Leo mentioned, the change in policy that Apple sort of announced, it was not in the keynote, so you can watch that as many times as you want. They never mentioned it. It's like a couple sentences at the end of a giant press release where they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to, because, we love our customers. We're just working with people. That's what we do. We partner.
Yeah.
It's Apple. It's the Apple way.
All right, let's talk Microsoft. We haven't had any Microsoft news. Let's do some Microsoft news. Is there any Microsoft? Anything happened?
Sorry, guys. It was Apple Week.
It was Apple Week. Whoa.
Is that a boat? What is that?
That was a fire engine going full steam down the street.
Flushing the toilet on the Apple Talk, folks.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Yeah,
flush twice. Sorry. Long way to Cupertino.
Microsoft 365. I'm thinking Mary Jo wants to take this one.
Yeah, I think it's time to hear Mary Jo's voice.
I will take this one. Sure. I will take this
Please
one.
Please do.
Yes.
So in March, Microsoft said they were going to be adding, consumer features to Teams. And this week, it began. They're starting to roll out the consumer features in preview for the Teams apps that they have on iOS and Android. So if you're wondering, what does that mean, consumer features for Teams? The examples they give are things like when you want to organize with a small group, a book club or soccer practice, coordinating who's bringing what, that kind of thing, that maybe if you're already using Teams at work, you might just think, hey, it would be cool if I could use Teams at home or with my group. And so they're counting on people being willing to have a second profile where you sign in with your Microsoft account so that you can use Teams separately as a consumer service, basically. So if you have a Microsoft Work account for Teams already, all you have to do is when this becomes available to you, add your Microsoft account. And then you'll have a separate profile where you can work with Teams as a consumer. And if you don't have a Teams Work account and you're still interested in trying this out, there'll be a way to sign up using just your Microsoft account and to just have that on your Teams app on iOS or Android. Sure. At some point, they're going to bring this to Windows, but they aren't really saying when, and they're also going to bring it to the web.
Should I try Teams?
Try it.
No.
Give it. You know what? I think it would be good to try it just to see, like, yes, this is for me, or
compare.
No way is this for me.
No, no. I'm going to say no. I mean this honestly. Don't. I don't mean really? Don't try it. I mean, you're not going to want to move to it. So for something like what we're doing, Skype is, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Skype is actually relatively lightweight. Teams has been so popular that they're just throwing stuff on top of it. And it's this giant Outlook-like program now that's got all this crap built on top of it.
It's like an operating system more than...
Oh, my God.
No, it works fine. It does work. But as far as, like, you know, again, like the type of thing we do...
Yeah.
This is... you know,
it's
this
overkill. For most people.
Yeah.
It is. It totally is.
Teams is initially so confusing, especially if you've come from Skype, because Skype, whatever, for all its ills, whatever, is a straightforward program. Even just for simple things like chats and Teams is incredibly complex.
It is. It's very feature rich. But I think for the kinds of things they're talking about for consumers, like the consumers really want to do this. I'm not sure.
I don't think so. It's a problem. It's kind of a problem.
It is.
Some of the things that they talk about for consumers, you know, you should keep track of the kids or something or whatever. Like, it kind of makes sense. But, maybe on mobile, it's a little less top heavy.
I know. I've never used Teams on mobile. I have it on my mobile phone, but I don't.
I have it on there just because, you know, we use it at work. So I got to make sure I don't miss stuff. But I don't use it for meetings or anything on the phone. But
No.
Right. So here's, let me just give you like a simple example. And this is just, we had so many, not blockers, but problems adopting Teams. And I have to bring it up just to remind myself. Like one of the views is Teams. And so the first thing we did was we created Teams that mimic the groups we used to have in Skype. So we have like a Throt huddle, which is our weekly meeting. We had the thing for the podcast we were doing. One for everybody. We had one for the guys at writeforthrot.com, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But these things are like threaded in there. If you chat in there and you miss messages, it actually hides them until you expand them when you come back. And the reason is there's actually a separate chat interface where you can see all the chats. So after creating all these teams inside of Teams, we belatedly realized what we needed to do was create chat groups, which is actually just like it was in Skype. But we wasted all this time figuring it out, you know, because it was so different.
Right. And it's just a totally different way of working, right?
Yeah. So as a personal annoyance, for example, imagine like Mary Jo and I chat on Skype. And so Mary Jo sends me a message. There's a little notification, says one or whatever. I know there's a notification. I look, it's from Mary Jo. I can respond, et cetera, et cetera. In Teams, when someone does that, it's the same thing. But if sometimes people respond with like, I don't know what you call it, but it's like it's a response. So you get like a little thumbs up or a heart or a happy face or something. I don't know what you call these things.
Stickers, emojis, emoticons, your favorite things.
So, Well, people do. We have young guys that work with us and some of them, that's how they respond. Yeah. Like I'll say, hey, I'm going to write this story. And they'll be like, thumbs up. Great. Thumbs up generates a notification. If I look at the chat and I see the thumbs up, the notification doesn't disappear. For some reason, that notification is in a different view called activity. And I have to click on activity, wait a second while it clears it out, and then go back to the chat that it appears in, and then it's gone. And I'm sorry, but like that is... I don't know if anyone understood what I just said because it's nonsense.
I do. I do because it happens to me. Yep.
Teams is it's already too complicated.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to go on multiple rants today, people. I'm sorry.
But, you did. You did. Come on. I really didn't.
Yeah, Teams is already, it's too popular for its own good.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
Teams too popular for its own good.
It's too good.
It's like the Mexican food in Once Upon a Time in Mexico. We're going to have to kill the chef. It's too good. We're going to return balance.
Did Microsoft update Windows 7 with Credge?
Yes, they did.
Weird.
No, because, you know, there's still people who are using it supported, right? Like they're paying for support.
Oh, but everybody got it though, didn't they?
Well, everybody will get it. I didn't get it. I maintain a Windows 7 PC for this kind of thing. Yeah, so I plugged it in, booted it up, checked for updates, nothing. Gave it a while, checked for updates again. Like, I don't see it yet, but yeah, the plan is to bring it to everybody on 7, 8, 1, and 8, 1, I should say, through Windows Update.
Oh, okay.
Hey, they want to grow those Credge numbers. You might as well give it to everybody,
right?
Guess
that's why, right? Yeah.
And look, it's still not supported, you know, but we know people are using it. I mean, you're better off using this thing than Internet Explorer for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not a, not a security update, just a new version of the browser.
Yeah.
Credgifying it.
It's
credging it up.
Credging it up, baby. Skype for Windows 10. Now, see, you called this, Paul, and I saw it on your blog, and I thought...
I'm not taking the blame for this.
No, but you said it was going to happen, I'm not sure what it means for us, because we use Skype all the time. What does it mean?
Yes. Let me tell you, between Mary Jo and I and everyone listening, nobody knows what this means. That's what's
that's what it beautiful. Means. No one knows.
It's beautiful. I know.
You should have seen us on Skype yesterday. I go to him. So are they like killing the UWP client, but they're replacing it with an Electron app, but they're still keeping the desktop app, which is also an Electron app?
I'm confused.
Like, yeah.
That's it? Yes. That's the answer? Yeah.
It's so complicated, Leo.
It is.
And so nothing on the other end.
I know.
It's like you learn how sausage is made and you wonder why anyone bothers.
Yeah.
So tell us, what is it? What's going on?
Okay. Should I take a stab? I'll take a stab, and then if I make mistakes, you can help fix me. So Microsoft has Skype on a variety of platforms, right? They've got it on Windows and Android and iOS. Do they have it on the Mac? I don't know. Probably.
Yes, they do.
They do. This week they updated Skype across all their clients to 8.61. But then as part of this, they said, we're going to replace the Skype for Windows 10 client that we have now with an they didn't actually say this, but they're replacing that with an Electron version. So the UWP version goes away, an Electron version gets added, and meanwhile they keep the desktop version.
Just want to interject one thing, because this will infuriate people.
Okay.
the UWP version was created with React Native.
It was.
If people are familiar with web technologies, one of the big complaints about Electron is that the apps are humongous. So technically, they made the app bigger and slower by moving it to Electron.
Right.
Yeah. Nice.
Because that's
a
good
platform,
idea.
Though. That's the advantage,
And it's also code compatible with the desktop version.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So at the same time, they're trying to bring the desktop version of Skype and the new Electron version up to feature parity. So they're adding a bunch of features to the new version so that it has almost all the same features as the desktop client, but not quite all of them. It's still missing a few things.
It's also missing two features that used to be in itself, like the React version.
Right, they were already right?
Share integration, and I think, was it Outlook contact integration, perhaps? I think those are the two.
Outlook contact integration is not there right now.
Yeah. Right, good.
Yeah, so you get a worse version of Skype with fewer features. Mm-hmm. That's the newly available version. And you can get these Skype apps from the store, right? Like the new one is still in the store, but you can also download the desktop version from Skype.com.
And they should basically be identical.
Right. Yeah.
but they have different version numbers, so you know which one's which. And if it's not clear, we have no idea what we're talking about. It's because it's impossible to understand why they're doing it this way. But
I know.
Oh, they're unifying the code base, right?
They're unifying but Skype has been, you know what? I was saying this to somebody today. I'm like, I always tell people the most confusing product group at Microsoft is Dynamics, because they're always changing the roadmap. They're changing what products do, what they're named. And I'm like, no, wait, I think Skype just said, hold my beer.
Yep. Right. I think the next major version, they're going to write it in Delphi again.
They might, you know, come full circle, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. So that's our basic understanding of what's going on with Skype, which, as you can tell, we don't really understand, but I don't think they understand what they're doing with Skype anymore.
And I'd like to make a request to anyone listening to this now or in the future. If you actually know what's happening, don't tell me.
Please.
I don't care.
No, I do care. Tell me, because I would like to know.
Yeah.
I would like to try to understand it, because I'm a glutton for punishment. I study the dynamics roadmap all the time.
I think that what we described is accurate.
Yeah, I think so. And it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big Electron fan, but a lot of stuff's in Electron.
Yeah.
No, consolidating the code base certainly makes sense, especially, you know, and again, not to be kind of sarcastic about it, but if you accept that Teams is kind of the future, whether you want it to be or not, I mean, why would you put an effort into two different code bases, both of which can run on the same exact computer? Consolidate.
Didn't they just this is kind of a related tangent, but didn't they just release a version of OneNote that is in Electron? They did, right?
That one, I don't know how it's made, but the same thing. It's Outlook for Windows 10 is a UWP app. I don't know if it was React Native. I'm not actually sure how they made it. The thing that's interesting about that is those are the two built-in Windows 10 apps I use all the time and love. I actually, when the desktop app was still that kind of complex old-fashioned app with multiple windows and all that stuff, and Outlook, OneNote had the 2016 version essentially, which was a traditional Office app. I actually prefer the Windows 10 versions, which are UWP apps essentially. And they're kind of they're stepping back from that. So
just, we keep saying Electron. Electron is a open source framework. It actually comes from GitHub. So they created it for their Atom editor. Mm-hmm. It has the Chromium engine in it. Not Chrome, not all of Chrome, just the rendering engine, and it's Node.js. Mm-hmm. And the reason people love it is because it's very cross-platform, and it's kind of like web dev. So a lot of people, know how to write, JavaScript and stuff. So
people who are technical as users, not as developers, but, like the people who read our stuff, they complain about Electron all the time. Electron's big because it has all of Chrome in it, is one of the things I always hear. It's very popular. VS Code is written in Electron, if I'm not mistaken, or using Electron rather.
Sure is.
Just like Atom, the code editor, or whatever that is, IDE. Microsoft, it's like cherry picking. What do they use? This app is this and this app is this.
So Slack is written in it too.
Slack is,
Teams is, right? The Teams client is.
Is Teams written in Electron?
I think so. I think it is.
Yeah, you could be right.
Yammer was. WhatsApp is. I'm looking at the list. Basecamp was. Yeah. It's very popular. Discord is. And I guess what people don't like is multiple copies of the Chromium engine, which is not Chrome. Again, it's just the engine. You need a rendering engine of some kind in there.
And you need it to be, you need not to be reliant on that thing being on your computer otherwise.
Right.
Because you might not have that browser, or you might have a different version of that browser. And this is like the same thing with .NET 3 and up. You can, or maybe it's .NET 5 and up. But I think it's .NET 3 and up. You can bundle that version of the .NET Core framework, or whatever it's called these days, with the app. So you don't have to worry about people installing extra stuff and blah, blah, blah. But the download's a little bigger. Of course it is.
Yeah. It might be a little slower. I mean, we're not talking, what was that awful Adobe technology that let you write cross-platform apps? I can't remember the name of it. It was like Flash, but it kind of had Flash.
It was a Macromedia thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I'll get it. I'll,
this is a, there's a long history of this.
Yeah.
It was a shock.
Not shock. Yeah. I was thinking Shockwave, but no. It was a Adobe Air. Remember that?
Yeah.
Thank you, Blue Lemon. Adobe Air. And there's always been a demand for this because it simplifies development. You get cross-platform, you get native GUI, ease of development. And there's a lot of, there's a little more overhead. These things are slower. It's not as bad as Air was.
It's like, there's a guy in my comments say, not to rip on individual users, but here's his username. He was saying, he refuses to use VS Code because it's written in Electron and it takes up 300 megabytes of RAM or something. And I'm like, how much RAM is in your computer, developer? What are you talking about? You don't have 16 gigs of RAM? Like, you know that Windows handles RAM management, right? Like, what are you, and why are you looking at that? Why? But people are, they're so.
It's OCD.
They're so focused. Yeah.
It's OCD. Like,
it's like they, yeah.
I just don't like the idea that it's doing that.
Task manager,
I know.
Like Scott, Leo, listen, this conversation is really interesting, but I noticed that Skype is taking up 430 megabytes of RAM, so I'm gonna have to sign off.
Why? That's it. I'm out of here. I don't hate Electron. And by the way, VS Code is another example of something you can run a server. You don't even have to run it locally. You can run it on your server.
I was gonna say VS Code is awesome. That's the other thing. It's not like
great.
Nobody brings this thing up and like, oh, this is a dog of an app. I mean, it's really nice.
It's fantastic. And the fact that it supports every language, does a beautiful job. It is a great code editor. They've done a really nice job with it. And so what if it runs Electron?
Yeah. Great.
It's better than
I don't care what anything runs, except I'll tell you the Teams desktop client is slow and it takes forever to load. And people blame that on it being written in Electron. And I don't know if that is the reason.
Well, now this is the thing everybody says, right? Well, that's Electron. Yeah. That's why.
Right.
Teams taking up. I mean, Teams is 494 megabytes. That's ridiculous. I don't need to talk to people more. Kill that thing.
Yeah.
As a Linux user, I like Electron because that almost always makes those apps available on Linux, which is great.
Yep.
So Electron and or something like it is kind of the future because of the cross-platform stuff. It's so key.
Right.
So anything that makes that happen is good with me. Good with me. This is from the you'll pay department.
Yeah. So these are actually like Mary Jo type stories, although I wrote them. But I'm curious about Mary Jo's opinion here because both of these things, if I'm not mistaken, require you to pay over and above the normal subscription that you might be paying to Microsoft for stuff. So, for example, Windows Defender ATP it's not like you don't get Windows Defender ATP as part of Microsoft 365. You have to pay for some advanced, I don't know if they're add-on SKUs or whatever it is, but there's a bunch of extra stuff you have to get, have to pay for. It's expensive for the right to download this preview on your Android phone and get what is essentially Microsoft's anti-malware, anti-phishing, et cetera, functionality on the phone. Do you know, maybe you know off the top here, are you familiar with what I mean by that? It's like the Defender.
I know what you mean. Is it, right, something you have to add on to your basic license or use the E5 instead of E3, right?
Something like that. Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah. Or you could buy the add-on or whatever, And then Edge Enterprise Sync, if you're familiar with how Microsoft Edge works, most individuals, all individuals probably, will sign in with their Microsoft account and they can sync settings, bookmarks, et cetera, from PC to PC. If you are in a workplace or an educational institution that uses the Microsoft infrastructure, you have what they call a work account, which is like Azure Active Directory. A lot of A's in there.
Yes, sir.
Which performs similarly, but is managed, right? And if I'm not mistaken, so this is, I don't technically even know what Edge Enterprise Sync is, but I believe this is the next level up. And I think this too requires some extra charge on the back end. And it's basically the company managing what you can sync between devices. So it's only Microsoft 365 Business Premium, which used to be, if I'm not mistaken, Office 365 Business.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah. So in the documentation for this, it says you need there. You need a lot of different prerequisites for this thing, right? You need Azure Active Directory Premium P1, P2, Office 365 E3 or above, Azure Information Protection P1, P2. So there's a whole list of things you need for this.
Yep. Every one of those things that she said comes with a sound effect that's a cash register making that ring in sound, you know,
ching,
the ching sound. Yeah, so that's what the oh, you'll pay thing comes from. It's both of these things. Yeah. You can't just sign up for a Microsoft 365 account and get either one of these. Like, both of them require your business to be very invested in the Microsoft infrastructure stuff.
Right. But if you are an enterprise, though, I mean, many enterprises will say this is worth the money because it gives us this whole level of extra security, right?
Control and security. Yep, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, but is it like as an individual? You can't go to the Google Play Store and run Windows Defender on my phone. Like, unfortunately,
I saw people going, I can't wait for this on Duo. I'm like, you probably won't use this on Surface Duo.
Surface Duo running now on Apple Silicon.
Right.
You know, another thing about the Apple thing.
Send later. Send that one later. And you can.
Send Paul later.
Now you can.
Send the Mac Silicon later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this one's a little confusing too. I guess Outlook, the rich client, already supports this, right? Send later. It's so if you're sending a message, you click send, but there's a drop down. You can choose send later and you can schedule it in different ways. If you're in an educational institution, you will get this now in Outlook on the web, which is that AAD-based infrastructure I was just talking about. I've heard from people who say they actually are getting this with a normal Microsoft 365 account, meaning like a work account, managed account. So presumably it's coming everywhere. And I think Neowen said it was even coming to Outlook.com, which is the public free Outlook.com, you know, MSA-based thing. So anyway, just a basic feature, but... nice to see them rolling it out sporadically like they do everything else. Well, like that Teams thing, like Teams is on mobile only in preview. Not Teams, I mean the consumer features of Teams. And it's like, guys, what about the web? What about Windows? What about the Mac?
No, and it's like, I mean, and then when people, like we always say, people say to us, something is not working on Outlook. I'm like, oh, which Outlook do you mean? There's a million of them, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah, so. You never know. But Microsoft doesn't help because their announcement for this is delightfully vague on who's getting this.
It's coming to Outlook, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, which ones?
Outlook.
Yeah.
I wish they would make some distinction between all the different Outlooks. It's very confusing.
That would help a lot. Yeah. It would.
Yeah. It's a big problem.
All right. So this is technically, an Xbox story. It's in your Xbox section. But actually, I think it goes much farther than that. I don't think Mary Jo wants to dial out for this. Microsoft's giving up on Mixer.
In fact, I wrote the story.
This is.
I'm sorry. This is a Mary Jo story.
It's a bit of a shock.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, when they announced it was kind of telling in the middle of the Apple WWDC.
Yeah. That's why it was a shock. It's like, what?
I was watching just to see who was going to dump news, and I'm like, oh, Microsoft.
Thurrott's tweeting up a storm because of Apple. Let's drop the news now.
Right. I, in some ways, am not surprised about this. I mean, Microsoft was spending so much money. They were paying all these big time game streamers like Ninja and Shroud, whoever those people are, to stream on their platform to try to get Mixer to be more competitive with Twitch.
They brought Ninja over. That must have cost them millions of dollars. That was only a few months ago.
Millions.
One of those guys got $25 million. I don't remember who's who.
Oh, it would have been Ninja. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But here's the thing. So to Microsoft's credit, because I think this was last fall when that happened. I don't understand that world. I don't understand how one of these goons is worth $25 million, whatever. And I'm a gamer and I don't get it. But whatever. If you're serious about this market, and this is like anything else, like you're a sport, and you want LeBron James, you got to pay for that. Mm-hmm. If you want to win the championship, you know, that's what you do. So to me, that showed that they were serious about it, right? They gave it, you know, they tried. Anyway, it did work. But, yeah.
No. The way they originally got into this was they saw what Amazon was doing with Twitch. They saw what Google was doing with YouTube and around gaming. And they're like, you know what? We're in the gaming space. We need a game streaming service. So they bought a company called Beam in 2016, which was just like 30 people or something. And they turned that into Mixer. And then they kept trying to get Mixer to go. And I kind of knew it was in trouble because you'd see a lot of Microsoft MVPs and Microsoft employees streaming, but they would be using Twitch. Right? They would never use Mixer.
That's a bad sign. Mary Jo, next year, I'm just saying, but go on.
Right. So it kind of reminds me, in a way, this happening of what happened to them with Nokia. They paid a lot of money, they invested heavily, and then they cut their losses early. Instead of just letting Microsoft this continue to try to go.
But the Microsoft employees would all have Android phones. Well, usually iPhones, actually, back in the day. But
iPhones, yeah.
Now they're Android. But yeah, at the time, it was all iPhones.
Yeah, I know. So I guess I wasn't that surprised when I saw them do this, even though they lost. You know, do you think they're going to, at the next earnings, talk about writing this off or down?
It's not a billion dollar thing, right?
But
they paid Shroud $10 million, they're telling me in the chat room, for 1 week. And 25 to Ninja, and now they're going to give him a exit fee.
Okay.
Oh, they are? Wow.
But, even if it's hundreds of millions of dollars, I mean, in the context of things, this isn't
it's not billions.
This is not Nokia.
No.
So here's the problem. The dark lining to the story is the two big players in this market, which Mary Jo mentioned, are YouTube and Twitch. And those two services are owned by Microsoft's two biggest cloud competitors, Google and Amazon. Yeah. And they can't partner with those guys, even though those services will, of course, be available to people that want to stream from Xbox or Windows or whatever. So they went with the tone-deaf choice of Facebook. Beloved Facebook. You know, everyone loves Facebook these days. They went with Facebook. So
is there somebody else they could have gone with? That's what I don't know because I don't know this market.
Well, they could have someone you would never heard of. Honestly, the way to do this is to not go with anybody and just say, we support all streaming services. Here's a ballot box. You can pick the one you want.
Twitch is the reason they bought Mixer because they were trying to compete with Twitch. So you want to give it, and that's Amazon. There's that's YouTube, like Google, which is, you know.
Duplex. You buy the distant number 5.
Right.
Then you just fail.
So giving it to Facebook Gaming, which is a new service, makes sense. Are they giving it or selling it?
I don't know.
No, neither. They're advising customers. They're saying to users, you should go over there, right? They're not sending any of the Mixer team to Facebook Gaming. In fact, some of the Mixer team is going to go to Teams to work on the low bandwidth technology, I think, right?
And according to Business Insider, both Ninja and Shroud are free agents now.
Yeah.
Yes. They're not going to Facebook either.
No, they're not going to Facebook.
I eagerly await the decision when Shroud will announce that he's taking his talents to South Beach.
fishing boat. And he's, we're on Mixer. I mean, I'm sad because it was one of the ways we were streaming. The show's on Mixer. Was
pretty good. I mean, although
it's good.
There's probably a reason why a lot of Microsoft guys were using Twitch, whatever. But
did you ever try to go on a Windows Insider webcast because they used Mixer and it was always really the service just it didn't hold up. It was always really glitchy and wasn't working. I'm like, okay, guys, what's going on here? Right.
It's too bad. So, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
You know, a moment of silence. We could just throw this in a pile of dead Microsoft technology that some people really cared about. And now it's dead.
I know.
I should have bought
with portable media players and
should have bought Zoom.
I saw someone blaming you this morning saying the rot wrecked my day.
It's like, thanks for ruining my day. I'm like, dude.
don't shoot the messenger here.
What do you like? Man. Shoot the messenger. Yeah. You know that's a thing, right? Do you read Shakespeare? Come on.
I'm just sad I didn't get on that Ninja and Shroud stock before.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah.
Too late. More games. Let's do more games with gold or whatever it is. Is it Games Pass? What's coming?
So, you know, like every month Microsoft announces new games for the Games Pass subscriptions on both console and PC. They usually announce one in the beginning of the month and then one in the middle of the month. But now it's the end of the month and they announced a third set of games that are all coming out this week. And
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
All ID at Xbox games. That's not coincidental. ID at Xbox is their kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Not enthusiasts, like the small, you know, really small game makers.
Indie games.
Thank you. And over the summer, they're going to be doing a bunch of ID at Xbox releases over, you know, a period of, I think, 3 months. So this is kind of like the first wave. So they're all going out to the X Pass. I can't speak today. Xbox Game Pass subscribe. That's cool.
I need a new game. I need a game.
I did.
I haven't tried that Microsoft Dungeons yet.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah,
that's the one.
That might be the one.
It's actually, if you go far enough in Microsoft Dungeons, you will find those forgotten products. The Island of Misfit Microsoft product.
You run into Steve Ballmer at the end. I think he's the boss on the seventh level.
Yikes!
All to get out. You know.
Yikes! Back of the book coming up, folks. Stay tuned. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. I know a lot of you are watching us. I hope you are watching us on ExpressVPN. That's one of the things I love most about ExpressVPN. It is a virtual private network that secures you, keeps you private, lets you eliminate geographic restrictions, but it doesn't slow you down. That's the thing it doesn't do. Actually, it's really, in a way, you choose a VPN because of things it doesn't do. It doesn't slow you down. You can watch HD video anywhere in the world. Watch your Netflix in England and get those Doctor Who episodes or get all the anime your eyeballs can handle by just saying, I'm on ExpressVPN in Japan, and it doesn't slow you down. So that's one thing they don't do. The other thing they don't do is they do not log. They do not keep track of you, and that's important. A lot of people use ExpressVPN even at home because, sad to say, it's completely legal for your internet service provider, and most of them do it, to sell your surfing information to marketers. And I don't care if you're in incognito mode. Your ISP sees everywhere you go and everything you do, unless you're using ExpressVPN. Put it on your smartphone and your carrier can't see you. Put it on your computer and your ISP can't see you. You surf privately because you emerge on the public internet into the fresh air. Wherever, whatever ExpressVPN server you choose. I always choose the one closest to me, and that's the default, but it could be anywhere in the world. And that's your IP address. A same IP address used by thousands of other ExpressVPN customers, completely anonymous. And they do not log. They run a server technology. I love this. So their servers, their VPN servers, use something that they developed called Trusted Server. When you log into a server, you get your very own. It loads up into memory. It runs completely out of RAM. You're surfing, you're doing everything. It's one of the reasons it's so fast. And it can't access the disk. It's sandboxed. So your server's running there in memory, sandboxed. When you close it, when you go, okay, thanks, bye, it disappears. Poof, as does every trace of your presence there. They have no record. Leo who? We never saw him. We don't know who he is. That's really important. And incidentally, ExpressVPN has had independent audits by trusted third parties. They say, yes, the privacy policy, they do not log. Yes, Trusted Server does exactly what Leo says it does. It is good. ExpressVPN, it's the only one I use. ExpressVPN.com/windows. If you want to try it right now, we got a deal for you. When you buy a one-year package, 3 extra months, 15 months of the price of 12. But you have to go to ExpressVPN.com/windows. It is absolutely necessary, even if you're only surfing at home now. You're not on those coffee shop Wi-Fis, the hotel Wi-Fis. We're all at home. You still need it. You still need the security. You still need the privacy. You still need ExpressVPN. It's the one I use, the one I recommend. And I know a lot of you use it. As an experiment, I turned it on one of my devices, and I forgot which. Just to see if I would notice, oh, like this device is slow. No, I don't get, I can't even figure, I have to go through all my devices. Last time I did the ad, I turned it on and I forgot to turn it off. It's on somewhere, expressvpn.com/windows. Back of the book time, everybody. Let's get Paul, Leo. Little Pauly Thurrott. What? Yes? Yes?
This is personally embarrassing to me, but I spent the entirety of last weekend working with Linux.
What? And how did you like it, Paul, that warm bath we call Linux? Did you enjoy it?
I'm not going to admit to that. But what I will say is that in the process of adding support for the Windows subsystem for Linux to my book, I did learn a lot. It's interesting. And by the way, this isn't my app pick of the week, but if you're not using Windows Terminal, go get that right now. The Windows Terminal is amazing. It's awesome. And this is Microsoft's multi-account terminal. So it supports PowerShell, well, technically Windows PowerShell, as well as what we now call PowerShell or PowerShell Core. There's an Azure console whose name escapes the command console, the command prompt. And then whatever Linux distributions you install in WSL, they all have their own tab. Multiple consoles in one window. It's pretty cool. But that's not the tip.
As a developer, you would probably enjoy it, I would think.
Yeah. In fact, I goofily spent a bunch of time researching text-based text editors to see if I could write within it. So, but we're not going to go there yet. Anyway, Microsoft has documentation on how to install this. I recommend ignoring that because it's incomplete and incorrect in some places. There are a lot of steps you have to do this correctly, and I have done them all multiple times on multiple computers. It works on Windows 10 Home and Windows 10 Pro. The big thing is keeping this thing or getting this thing updated and upgraded because there's two different parts to it. There's a you have a Linux distribution, and then it has individual packages, all of which need to be updated on the first pass. And then it will prompt you from time to time when this stuff needs to happen in the future. But anyway, it's all in the article. It will be in the book. So if you have the Windows 10 field guide, this chapter should be available sometime probably in the next week. It's going to cover the command shell, which is the real name of command prompt, and Windows PowerShell as well.
But nice.
Yeah, the Ubuntu, not Ubuntu, the WSL is probably the biggest.
Which Linux did you end up choosing? Or did you just
I just went with Ubuntu for the book because it's the first one and it the simplest one and, and whatever. But I one thing I haven't done yet and I will be doing is WSL supports multiple distributions. So you can actually install five of them if you want or whatever. And I haven't done it yet. But my understanding is if you do that, you get a different terminal application for each environment. But again, if you use Windows Terminal, free from the Windows Store, you know they're in a drop down. You can just kind of use the same.
That's really
it's really nice.
Yeah,
it's super excellent. Command
what
line.
Desktop environment are you using? A GUI or did you not install the GUI?
So not yet. So that's the second half of it. Right. So and one of the things that WSL has the underpinnings of support for is the ability to run GUI apps. That's awesome. Actually, there are ways to do that today, but Microsoft is going to add support for that. And by the way, this stuff is all coming in Windows 10 21H1. So the next actual major version of Windows 10, which will come out a year from now.
Okay.
If you want it now, if you want to see what they're doing, just get on the fast channel. Oh, I'm sorry. What are they calling it? The dev channel probably the Windows Insider program. Because that's some of that stuff is there now. So they added support for GPU compute workflows. In the latest build there's a build today, but they added that last week. But they've also been talking about all the other stuff they're going to be adding. And the big one to me is, GUI support. And so that's something, as that happens, I'm probably going to start playing with that because that looks really interesting. Of course, what they really need is a WSM so we can run Mac apps. But
this is getting a little out of hand now.
No, he's not. No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I like... So there's in the Linux world, there are kind of two big paths you can take for stability, especially if you're running a server. You want a long-term service, LTS, just like Windows version of it, that only has security fixes. But what happens then is the result, you get old. The apps are, several versions behind sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I use the other side, which is sometimes they call it a rolling distribution, where apps are just updated all the time, every day. Anything that needs an update, not just for security, but for any reason. Right. And I like that model. And I think there are a number of really good Linuxes that do that safely. My favorite is right now is Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O. I would take a look at that. But and I only like that because I just want, I always want the latest, whatever, Firefox. I always want the latest Chromium. I always want the latest whatever. And sometimes when I'm using Debian, which is my favorite, you know, server Linux, you get, it's like way behind. It's like, why am I using 2016 software? I want the more recent stuff. So
there's some neat stuff you can do in WSL that I have only just hit the surface of. You know, for example, if you're using a bunch of Linux apps, but you want to add a Windows app into the mix, you can do that. You can run Windows apps from that environment. You can run Linux apps from the command prompt if you want to do that. If you are a developer, and this is the, I think this is the big use case, you're using Visual Studio Code, you have the version running under Windows, but you're hitting a web server that's in Linux, and it's, you know, there's some amazing things you can kind of do. So I'm not sure how deep I'm going to get into this, but I do like going down rabbit holes. So we'll see how it goes.
It's fun. And I'm telling you, as a developer, you're just going to feel right at home. where Linux is hard is for people who are used to GUIs and they don't want to use a command line. But you're gonna go, oh yeah, I like this.
Yeah, all right. So now that you mention it, not to get on a tangent, but Mary Jo will remember this. One of the really cool things that happened very briefly in the Microsoft space is that Windows was always built GUI first, and the command environments, whatever they were, could only handle a subset of what was available in the GUI. And that was always kind of a problem from a management perspective. So there were all these management shells over time that kind of addressed this need in certain ways. PowerShell was designed to address this need. But in Unix, it's command line first, and everything that can be done in the GUI, you know, supposedly can be done in the command line first. It's command line first.
Right.
Unix world certainly was the case. And very briefly, Microsoft went down this path. I don't remember the version. It might have been 2010, 2013 even. But one of the major versions of Exchange was built from PowerShell first, and then the GUI was literally GUI front ends to the PowerShell stuff that was on the back end. And I don't think they ever did that again. I think that was I think. I could be wrong, but I think that was the last time they ever did that. Maybe the only major example of that. But it was a big proof point.
I don't remember that,
you know.
But that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. You don't? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, it was some version of Exchange Server. And maybe they continued that forward. I know there have been subsequent versions, but it seemed like they were going to – that was – you know, they've always had kind of a Unix envy, I think. And that was in the PowerShell, when PowerShell was the only way forward, that was going to be the model for the future. And I don't think it ever happened, but it's kind of interesting.
Okay. Mr. Linux, Paul Thurrott, soon we'll be talking about your favorite command line shells.
I know. I said to him, he's going to be wearing a penguin shirt on Windows Weekly. That's coming up soon.
No, it's going to be better than that. It'll be like a ski mask, and I'll be coming from an undisclosed location. You'll exchange my voice, so it won't be clear that it's me.
He'll be developing on an Apple Mac, and he'll be like,
jokes like Paul. I spent the entire podcast talking about Mac and Linux, you know, so welcome to the future.
But this is wild. I know.
I'm never going to do that again. But anyway, it's just, you know, that time of the year, folks. I'm sorry.
Let's get your app pick of the week. How about that?
So I just throw Windows Terminal. Look that one up. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But the actual pick is Opera 69 just came out. This is the desktop version of the browser. Chromium based, right? So you get all that good stuff. They've been building out this sidebar feature, which I think is actually getting really interesting. And over time, each version, it seems like they kind of add support for some social media service to it. So they added this time Twitter support, which is an addition to built-in support for Instagram, Telegram, Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, and some other services. So they're kind of building this thing out where, you know, we just talked about this. The browser is kind of the front end for everything you do. And so they built some of it in. So it's kind of like a slide out bar. So as you get notifications on, in this case on Twitter, you don't have to open a tab and go find it or whatever. It's just kind of built into the app. So it's kind of an interesting idea, actually. Worth checking out.
Cool.
It's no Linux, you know, but what is?
Paul will be back a little later on.
Oh, that's true.
He will.
Leo, that's for you.
It's for me. Excellent. Meanwhile, our enterprise pick of the week with Mary Jo Foley.
Right. I think it's always interesting to look at the companies Microsoft is buying. And a lot of these don't get a lot of play. You know, it's not every day you buy Mojang or GitHub, right? Mm-hmm. They're buying a lot of small companies, but it's still very interesting and kind of gives you a good indicator of where they're kind of investing next and what kind of services they might come up with. So in the past 2 weeks, they bought two companies that didn't, again, this didn't get a lot of play. But the first one is a company called ADRM Software. So this is only going to make sense to people who understand data leaks. Everybody drink. ADRM Software makes large-scale industry-specific data models. So this is the kind of software that includes things like entities, relationships, business rules, and all that kind of stuff. So what Microsoft's going to do, I believe, is combine these data models that it just bought through ADRM Software with their own Azure compute and storage services, and then do some kind of an analytics type thing that involves their data lake technology. This may have to do with Common Data Model, which is something Microsoft's been working on for a long time. They didn't actually call that out, but that would be my guess where that acquisition goes. And then the other one they bought earlier this week, I believe, is a company called CyberX. So CyberX is a little easier to understand. It's an IoT security firm. And what they do is they let customers see where their IoT devices are. So they generate these digital maps of devices on factory floors so they can see exactly where their devices are on the floor. They can see the security state and if it's connected or not connected. And if you think about Microsoft combining that with something like its Azure Sentinel service, which lets you kind of hunt out in advance cyber threats, this could be very interesting in the IoT space. So just wanted to kind of put those on listeners and viewers viewer map so nice. They know where Microsoft's making some investments.
Good. And this week, you have something near and dear to my heart, your developer tip of the week.
I do. So we've been talking about Mac. We've been talking about Linux. So why not make it the holy trinity and talk about Java?
Oh, man.
Not
the same category, but okay. Yeah.
So Microsoft has been working on the OpenJDK, which is the open source implementation of the Java developer kit. They've been doing that for, I think, a year plus. They bought a company last year. I'm forgetting their name, and I don't have it handy here. Sorry. Let me look at it. JClarity. JClarity is a company that does a lot of work in the OpenJDK space with Adopt OpenJDK. And so Microsoft bought them, and they said, you know what? We're going to use this to optimize Java workloads on Azure because a lot of our customers are doing Java on Azure. But this blog post they did today where they're talking about how they are bringing OpenJDK to Windows 10 on ARM also includes a really interesting slide of all the places that Microsoft uses Java internally, and they use it a lot. Java. It's all over LinkedIn, Minecraft, their Android
Minecraft
work.
Minecraft is probably the best-known right? Java app in the world.
Yeah. Hundreds of servers built in Java for Minecraft. SQL Server, Java is now embedded out of the box. And then Android, this is a very interesting statistic. Thousands of Microsoft developers who are building native or Xamarin apps for Android are using Java as well. So The bottom line is Microsoft really loves Java, and they have an entire division that is called the Java Engineering Group inside the Microsoft Developer Division, and they're doing a lot of investment there, and they're going to continue to push the OpenJDK on Windows 10 on ARM. Yeah, so I even brought ARM into it too. There you go.
Wow.
That's my second pick.
This is such an open Windows Weekly.
It is. It's like a love fest for open source.
And now, and this is another curve, no beer this week, Paul Thurrott with the cocktail of the week.
Yeah, so, you know, Mary Jo's writing about Xbox and she's writing about developer stuff. And I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to do a drink pick this time. No, yeah. Actually, what's been going on really, Leo, I don't know if you're aware of this activity online, but every time I post a picture of a cocktail, your wife says, you got to teach Leo how to make these.
Yeah, she's been talking about this. She says, Paul's making me thirsty.
Yeah. So I'm going to teach you how to make one of these.
Okay. This is one that you posted on Instagram or?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at my Instagram, this is the most recent cocktail picture.
Oh, good. All right. Good.
It's between the picture of the frog and the picture of the deer, because I don't know if I mentioned this, but I live in the middle of frickin' nowhere. But anyway.
Yeah, you do.
My wife is the maker of, I should say too, my wife is the one who makes the cocktails. So I asked her for this recipe. So I just take pictures of them, but she makes them. And she invented this one. It's a take on the Cosmopolitan, not CosmoDB, as Mary Jo says here. Come on. But the Grand Cosmo, because it uses Grand Marnier instead of Cointreau. But it also uses pear vodka.
This one here? This one with the mint?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I can't.
So six parts pear vodka, two parts Grand Marnier. If you don't have Grand Marnier, you barbarian, you can use triple sec or Cointreau if you have it. Two parts lime juice and four parts cranberry juice. Shake with ice. Serve over ice. Garnish with a lime wedge or slice, as you see there. Also, she put that's mint. I think that's fresh mint.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, this is a good drink. Ooh. A really good
pear,
drink.
I have to get some pear vodka. That's the only thing I don't have in that list.
Yeah. And now, a standard Cosmo, you could just use any, you know, unflavored vodka.
I think the pears kind of give it a nice little. Yeah,
pear vodka is really good.
I am going to stop off on the way home. Get some pear vodka.
It sounds good.
All right. Lisa to back off.
Back off. Doing my best. Lisa. Paul is teaching me the ways of the McCungies.
Right.
That's a good looking cocktail. The only problem I have with the other one, it's in a plastic glass.
Oh, so that we actually got from one of the restaurants, you know, the first restaurant we ever went to where we actually ate there
since.
So that's technically a to-go drink. That's why it's in a plastic.
All right. You post a lot of stuff to make me hungry. And
yep, like the frog.
And there you are getting a haircut.
Yep.
Yep. I like your Instagram. Ooh, those look good too, with the strawberry and the champagne. Ooh. Paul, you know how to live.
Well, I don't have much of a choice. I don't really live it going anywhere, so.
No, I think it's really important to embrace this and to learn to make your domicile be more.
I take a picture of the dog in the river every morning, and I said to my wife just this morning, we're going to have 11,000 photos of the same thing by the time this pandemic ends.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that happens. I do hope you're staying safe and well. It sounds like you both are. It's great to have you. Every week we talk about Windows on a Wednesday. It's Windows Wednesday.
We should say every Wednesday we usually talk about Windows. This week was a little different. I apologize for that.
But I think it's absolutely germane to Microsoft's business.
It is. Yeah. It's connected. As much as I don't like talking about it, it's connected.
Mary Jo, not talking about it is not going to make it go away.
That's right.
Yes, it is, Paul.
Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Her ZDNet blog, Paul Thurrott, does the same at Thurrott, T-H-U-R-R-O, double
all
good.
All about iOS.
Soon to be. I can't believe how great Linux. Xcode programming is. I'm just loving Swift UI.
Oh, by the way. I know enough about that to know that will never happen. So no worries there.
I got so excited after the event on Monday that I went right home and started Stanford's iOS coding class.
Oh, wow.
Have they ever updated that?
They updated every semester. So this is spring 2020.
Oh, so they do have a 2020 because they didn't have it for a few years.
CS 139.
Okay.
And it used to be an iTunes U. That's the only thing. Apple's getting rid of iTunes U, which makes me very
angry.
Where
do you find it?
YouTube.
Okay.
You can follow along. But there's also, if you know, it's too bad you guys don't use iPhones, because there's a great Apple developer app on here that has all the courses from WWDC. What's nice, they're making all that public, just as Microsoft did with Build.
Well, Leo, as it turns out, actually,
there you go. Look at that. I see the giant bump on your camera. So
he's got a fedora, too. Don't let him kick you.
So,
funny you mention it.
It's a good time to be a developer, honestly. All this stuff is online and available and free and, man, just really, really exciting. So, what was I saying? Oh, Paul's book updated now with, or soon to be, with Windows subsystem for Linux. You could find that at leanpub.com. That's the field guide to Windows 10. And it's always updated, so that's nice. Once you buy it, you get the new stuff all the time. There's great posters there, too. Leanpub.com from Paul Thrott's field guide to Windows 10. We'll be back next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. You guys aren't going to Europe or anything, right?
No. We might not be allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, good. Yeah, because right about now is when Paul would be decamping for the Netherlands or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh,
I would have been, where was I? I would have been in New York this week, and I would be going to D.C. this week for two different shows. That was this week, and I would have been in... I can't remember anymore.
Don't make yourself crazy thinking about
it. I know. I shouldn't think of this. It's awful how much travel I'm not doing, but what are you going to do?
I would also not be here. Let me just check on my... I still have all of this that I had planned. Man. Let's see.
Just,
I would be.
You can't think about it.
Today is the 24th. Let's see. I would be... Where would I be on the 24th? Would I be in Bratislava? Yes, I would.
Bratislava?
I would be in Bratislava, Slovakia, nestled in the foothills of the Carpathian mountain range right now. Right now.
That would have been nice.
Yep, I had videos, best things to do in Bratislava.
Yep. Best social isolating to have in Bratislava.
Oh. And then let's see, tomorrow... If it wasn't Bratislava, I would be, where would I be? What's after Bratislava? Tomorrow I'd be in Vienna. Oh. See, I should really get rid of all of this because this is just making me sad.
Yeah. You should.
Yeah.
We'll get back.
Yeah.
If it's Tuesday, this must be Bratislava.
Now, see, now if it's Tuesday, this must be the living room.
I do like brats.
Brats.
In fact, one of the things I had promised to my family is that we would stop on the river and get some very famous little sausages. Every town on the Rhine and the Danube have sausages they're famous for. And a nice stein of beer, some sauerbraten. Some sauerkraut. It would have been good.
Some schnitzel.
Schnitzel. I didn't make schnitzel last night, but it's not the same.
There's a spetzel.
No, it's spetzel and schnitzel. You could have schnitzel with your spetzel. Why not?
Spetzel is the noodle. The doughy thing. Yeah, it's a noodle. Pasta.
Yeah. Swiss. All right. Enough petty fogging.
Enough of what isn't.
Enough wool gathering. Tis time to say farewell to all our family. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Stay well, stay healthy. We will see you next time, on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the TWiT Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and are breaking the tech news. That's right, it's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.